Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City. This is Film Grok. Our movie for this week is Kill Bill Volume 1. My name is Serge Dalpierre, and this week we have...
Duncan K. Fraser.
And...
Taylor Thomas.
And...
Heidi Hilliker. I just bit the mic, by the way. I was so excited. And with this new mic stand, I don't know, you listeners can't see this, obviously, but we got new mics, and they are very much up in our faces, to which I just sampled one.
And, how was it?
Was it tasty? Tastes like foam.
It'll do that, yes.
Well, yeah. You're into Muppets, yeah. So that works, right?
Yeah, you like there foam? You go. Yeah. Apparently, that is a flavor I like.
It's a good side dish with paint fumes.
It lets you talk with a good posture, though, right?
Yes.
Yes, that's sure. Which is important, because the other setup, the stands, did not encourage good posture.
Nor did they encourage flavor
biting.
Sampling.
Yeah, biting.
You know, there's a downside to everything. It's okay. It's okay. You'll get used to it. It's all right.
I will get used to it.
All right. Our cue point for this fabulous, fabulous movie is at the very end of the Miramax logo at the beginning of the film. When the Miramax logo fades to black, the sound will have already started. But pause it there, and then when we're ready to go, I'll count down 3, 2, 1, play. And then Agnes in the Film Grok projection booth will start the film, and we'll start it at the same time.
Good old Agnes.
Good old Agnes.
Yes. Well, we had Gus and Bubba before.
Yeah, it didn't work out.
I prefer a lady.
Me too.
They just rotate. No, actually, they take turns.
Oh. Aren't Gus and Bubba those ones that are each missing an arm and they try to do like the false Siamese twin thing? Because that didn't work so well with the projector.
I didn't. I'll have to check.
I want to say that while they were here.
I'll have to check their limbs next time. Okay.
And after this film, there will be some people limbless.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, by the way, spoiler alert. You better watch this film. Because we're going to spoil the crap out of it.
A lot.
Everyone's seen Kill Bill, and what are you pointing at? We're going to get to it. Don't worry.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
Yeah, we'll get there. When's the first time you saw Kill Bill, Heidi?
Well, Taylor and I were just talking about this in the car ride over here.
Oh, you were?
Yes.
Oh.
The first time I saw Kill Bill was in the theater, and it was in Orlando, Florida, and I'm pretty sure it's a Regal. And I had just gone down there to film school. So I have a lot of really good memories about seeing this film. I went and saw this with a gaggle of nerdy boys that I went to film school with.
Everyone should have a gaggle of nerdy boys that they take with them to certain films.
Women, or nerdy, ladies,
nerdy
girls.
Gaggles
of nerdy boys.
Nerdy
you need
girls.
Them.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that would be...
Nerdy girls don't really roll in a gaggle, though.
No.
There's
and
just
they
like
don't
one
tend
here,
to
one there.
Yeah, they're kind of
see
alone.
Movies together, per se. Or at least they're not as loud and interesting as a gaggle of nerdy guys would be.
But you could see a gaggle of girly girls if you happen to, you know, drop by Eat, Pray, Love or something.
Next time that I can't throw up and I want to, I'll try
glory.
That.
Yes, ditto on that one.
But anyway, we all had like a really, it was just, this movie really blew all of our minds out. Like just, it was so fun. We all went and saw it. We all sat around talking about it afterwards. And it was just like a really great experience. Never had seen anything really like it. And on like even the storytelling. And I mean, you have, you know, just that all brought together, the acting, the action, and the cinematography in it is amazing. Like there's that one crane shot that's in the, and we were talking about this in the car, that's in the club scene. And I'll point it out when we get to it. But it's just, you know, it was the kind of film afterwards, my friends and I were trying to figure out how they shot that, how they did that. So, love this movie.
Neat.
Cool. Taylor.
The first time I saw Kill Bill, I was in Lake Tahoe, and it was my first Quentin Tarantino movie.
Nice.
Yeah. And it blew my mind. My brain cells were high-fiving each other.
Mine were on the back of the seat.
Yeah.
But
they were like high-fiving.
No, that's the other one. That's Pulp Fiction.
Oh.
And
that too.
Yeah, that is Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah.
But, and I had just started taking my first acting class, so when I got back, we had all, the first class after that, we were all talking about it.
Right.
Yeah. I loved it.
Fun.
Wow.
Then I had to see all the Quentin Tarantino movies.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you're like, I have to wait a year for the sequel?
I know, because the way it ends.
But it was like the best wait ever. I love waiting for a really anticipated film like that.
Mm. Like at the end of Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah, like when I was a little kid. Watching it on
I
the
remember
VH.
That oh. sucked a lot.
Yes, it
that
did.
That weight was bad.
That weight
no.
was...
I wasn't even that old yet.
There was like no weight for me.
But
no.
That's another conversation. Yeah.
By the time I saw it.
Yeah, it was, they were out.
They were out.
Yeah.
Right.
So that was awesome.
When we do Jedi, we will definitely talk about...
The wait time.
The disappointment encountered. Oh, bless you, by the way.
Thank you.
The disappointment encountered in seeing Jedi after the end of Empire, which was, but that is for another conversation. Mm-hmm. I don't think this was a fine wait. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what about you?
I saw it in the theater the first time also. Mm-hmm. And what year did this come out again?
2003.
What was I doing in 2003? I don't remember, but I do remember really, really enjoying it because I've been into martial arts films since I was, you know, middle schooler. And I grew up on Van Damme and Seagal. And there are elements, definitely, of those kinds of films. I think he pays homage to, like, four different genres of action film.
Right.
There's, like, the Hong Kong crazy flying action. There's the, you know, old, like I was talking about, like the Van Damme, like action kind of thing.
They shoot him up.
There's the samurai film. Yeah. And then there's the elements of the Western.
Right.
Also.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's at least four. There's probably more, but at least four. And just like this kind of coalesced and all that. And I already liked Tarantino's films, mm-hmm. you know, loved Pulp Fiction, loved Reservoir Dogs. So it was like very anticipated and did not disappoint. It's like one of those rare times when it's like,
right.
Oh, this filmmaker that I really like is going to, I wonder if it'll be as good as blah, blah, blah. And it was like better.
Right.
Like,
when you get
like
more than you went in expecting.
Than, right.
Oh, how rare
right.
is that?
Exactly.
Yep.
It was lightning strike. And I was just like, oh, I think I saw it like four or five times in the theater.
Yeah. I saw sure. it several times in the theater.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And everyone else is like, it's so bloody and I can't stand it. And like, you know, Christian people back home are like, why'd you watch that movie? And I'm like, cause it's freaking
awesome.
Just saying. Just saying.
Might have been the first DVD I got on Blu-ray too. Like,
oh wow.
Yeah, it might be my first Blu-ray.
May I say I have not bought a Blu-ray yet because I don't have a Blu-ray player, but I feel like it's going to be some kind of religious experience when I do. So I need to choose my first one carefully.
Wow. Well, I nominate the upcoming film.
Yes.
Okay. So, well, under due consideration. Sorry.
My first Blu-ray was Kick-Ass.
Oh.
I like that.
I just got in the Blu-ray player and it's just like, yep. I'm getting Kick-Ass.
I remember.
Yeah.
And we watched it.
And we watched
it. It was awesome.
It was awesome. I'm curious about Sucker Punch, though, which is coming up.
Yeah, me too, actually.
I'm going to go see Sucker Punch today. Taylor and I are in our Girls with Swords Sunday.
Yes.
And
you have a Girls with Swords Sunday?
Every third Sunday.
Come over?
We do now. And we will be carrying on this Sunday. Day with some Sucker Punch. Although, I'm going to say this, and I would bet every penny that I own.
Yeah.
That Sucker Punch will be no Kill Bill.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing. I'm like, oh, so disappointed, but I want to see Sucker Punch too. But it does address something that which I find interesting and is, I guess, you know, you wouldn't figure, oh, that this film would appeal to women. But I think it's interesting that it does appeal to women. I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, but I don't know if you can really...
Call you guys women?
Well, I mean, just that's not what I meant.
We're a special breed,
but I do think that
we're special women. Okay,
I don't really know how to gauge the female interest in a movie like this because I tend to be interested in movies that I guess the general female population may not be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I mean,
but I'll keep my eyes open tonight and I'll see how many girls are there.
Yeah,
how many girls are at Kick-Ass?
Sucker Punch.
Sucker Punch. It's
not right.
Kick-Ass 2.
It's
too.
Not Kick-Ass.
And may I just
say... Yeah, we may wait a long time for Kick-Ass 2, yes?
We're gonna, I'm sure, get into this, but this film that we're about to watch is like super uber female empowerment.
It is.
Well, yes, it is.
Well, that's my
so
point,
great.
Is that, you know, it is, which is a lot different than what we see in the theaters. Well, that's what Sucker
right.
Punch...
And I've heard a lot of what I've heard about from Sucker Punch is especially from people who've had very negative things to say about it have said that it is very anti-feminist and that's what they don't like about it. And these are guys.
Oh.
Nerdy guys that have said this. So
it's more of the eye candy with
right,
guns
like,
kind of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's going to be no substance there.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Tear.
Huh.
Right.
Sort of like Sin City was a little bit.
Yeah, but I love Sin City.
I love Sin City. I do.
That is a great film.
I'm trying to remember that recently. I'm trying to remember that. Yeah. Anyway, so the first time I saw Kill Bill was.
Yeah.
I don't know. I saw it in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
I think I saw it in the theater once. I mean, I liked it. I just don't remember being super blown away. I think I remember what I was disappointed about is I wanted to see the whole film.
Right.
That's the whole thing. Because I know the whole film had been done. And then, of course, they decided to split it up into two because of blah, blah, blah. And so that it was split. That was my disappointment. I didn't want to wait a year. So I waited a year and that was fine. Except for the little, I don't like, a little prologue at the beginning, Kill Bill Volume 2. That's the one thing I don't like.
We can talk more about that when we watch Kill Bill Volume 2.
Yeah, when we get to Kill Bill Volume 2, we can talk about that.
I have things to say about that.
No, that's fine. But that was the whole thing. My whole thing is I really wanted to see the whole thing. And also, I think in this film, the whole scene towards the end at whatever the place is, I can't forget the name of the place, but when it all goes to black and white.
Mm-hmm.
It was not supposed to go to black and white, but that was the way they got the R rating here.
Right,
by going to black and white as opposed to keeping it in color, which is how it was done originally. That's what I wanted to see. Because once again, of course there's going to be blood. I mean, what do you expect? You know, limbs are coming off. I mean, yes.
I didn't realize
I have more to say about this as well. But I'm going to wait until we get to that part.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But this is all part of my experience. Yeah. So I basically liked it. I love Pulp Fiction. I really, really do. And I appreciated Jackie Brown. I appreciated it. But with Kill Bill, I wanted this to be as good as Pulp Fiction was, and it wasn't. So that was my reaction.
I like it better than Pulp Fiction.
Ditto.
And I love Pulp Fiction.
No, ditto.
I like it. Kill Bill Volume 1 is my favorite Quentin Tarantino film.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
I think I'd have to go with
hands
that
down.
Too.
All right. So we'll see.
I think this is like the pinnacle of his creative genius, and I don't know if he'll ever reach it again.
Huh.
Sorry.
See,
QT.
I feel Pulp Fiction is a pinnacle, but I can always be convinced otherwise. So that's interesting. Okay.
Or otherwise coerced.
Are we going to do this now?
Yes.
Hang on.
Yes.
This we're talking
you
about.
You have
Duncan,
to introduce.
Go ahead.
You're the host.
No, you say it.
I say it? Okay.
There's a fortune cookie.
Well, you started the tradition.
I forget which. No, wait. Fine, I'll talk about it.
You go ahead.
Duncan's going to talk about it.
It's a touchy subject.
We previously just randomly brought some fortune cookies into, what movie was it again that we did?
True Romance.
Thank you. That's right. You were here. And we read a fortune cookie. We all had a little bit of fortune cookie, and that made it the fortune cookie for the movie commentary, to apply to the movie commentary that was about to happen.
So we're about to have a fortune?
Yes. And in traditional martial artists fashion, I'd like to open this fortune cookie now. It's a little mutilated because it was in a jacket pocket.
Okay, so open.
Yeah, okay.
Open it? Or do you want me to open it?
Oh! It's the traditional martial arts way.
Ladies and gentlemen,
smashed it with his fist.
Please.
That actually kind of scared me.
that's apparently tradition.
That was your ears. I'm sorry.
Martial artist tradition. Okay, everybody gets a little piece.
Oh, jeez. Okay. All right. Are you going to read? Can we have the fortune? Can I read it?
Sure.
All right. Here. We must partake of the...
Yeah. Oh, for it to be true.
And you know,
I'll clean it up later.
Buddy, it's spilling all over the place now.
Yes, I know. What? Okay, Serge, here you go.
And the fortune for today is, your present plans are going to succeed. Ah!
Nice!
Now that's a real fortune. It's not like, the sky is blue or anything like that.
I can see her reading that at the beginning or somewhere along her journey.
Yeah, I could.
You know, when she has the sushi at the swordsman or the sword maker's shop, she gets a fortune cookie. Your present plans are going to...
Yeah.
Hanzo, yes, it slipped my mind for a moment.
That's right.
Okay. Hanzo.
All right. I'm just getting some crumbs here, and we are going to get started.
Serge.
Well, the problem is whatever. Getting all over the place. Okay. So, Agnes, are you ready up in the booth?
I think she's ready.
Okay. Thank you, Agnes. Okay. So, Agnes is ready to get going. So, on my count, 3, 2, 1, play. Okay, there was a slight delay there, but now we see the Shawscope thing up there, just so you know the synchronization is there. Okay, so I love that he has, and of course he has the cheesy Our Feature presentation.
I love it.
That's great.
Anytime he adds a little bit of that like 1970s feel to think, which he does to everything, let's be honest, it's really nice.
Well, it also puts you in the mood for basically it being... essentially a grindhouse film.
Right.
You know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
It's a good way to put it.
You get some good chop sake.
And he quotes
Klingon.
Revenge is a dish best served cold.
Old Klingon proverb.
That's right. And then, of course, it's just shot like a freaking art film.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's so fantastic about this movie, like what I was saying, you know, about when we would all talk about the cinematography and just like the artistry of it. I mean, I had just gotten to film school. Everybody was so geeked to talk about like the technical aspects of making a film. Mm-hmm. And that's why this is so, it's beautiful because there's so many different techniques that are used, you know, from doing black and whites. And there's so much different, like the, obviously like the crane shots. And I mean, it's almost, we would go and we're like looking at our textbooks of the different framing and the different techniques and the dolly shots. And we go and see this movie, everything's being used.
And it's brilliant. First of all he's done is he's used two shots and he's introduced the character with his handkerchief.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That is brilliant. Yeah. It really is. I'm like, and just the way, and of course her acting is amazing. She totally sells this moment.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
She totally
does.
Well,
very few actors can
she's
really sell something in a close-up like that alone. Oh, like, yeah. Just so much communication.
She's communicating the whole history of their relationship right there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even,
oh, good one.
And,
yeah,
even,
like,
and it's interesting where her eye line is during the whole time. And just look at it. I love the black and white because it really brings out his skin, and you can just see
the pores,
mm-hmm. the pores
and
on
the texture.
Him.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, you see it on her too. I think it. Oh, yeah. You know, it really does assist in making this look even more brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and of course he talks about the whole thing about sadism versus masochism,
mm-hmm.
and then of course she that.
That shocked me.
Yeah,
so
it did.
Yep.
It made me jump.
Thought.
The crap.
Made me jump in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it's meant to. And it did that very well.
And I love this song. The soundtrack of this film
is brilliant.
It's killer.
It's brilliant.
If you ever, I really do like buying soundtracks because I think a lot of times they're some of the best compilations of music you can find. And this is one of the best soundtracks ever. Pick it up, people. It's good.
Is it Nancy Sinatra?
Yeah, it's mm-hmm. Nancy Sinatra.
Minor side note, looking at the credits here, remind me, Julie Dreyfus, is she...
she's the one who loses the arm.
No, I know that, but is she his daughter?
No.
No,
no relation.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Bill's
daughter?
No.
Richard?
No. Yeah.
Richard. Oh, no.
Oh, in real life.
Yeah, real life.
I love this introduction, too.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
mm-hmm. then
one,
we
two.
Get all of these later on in the follow-up film as well. And I like that. That's a very kind of old style technique of telling a story, you know, like a list.
Yeah.
Do you remember going to see that horrible movie, The Other Boleyn Girl, and he sat behind us?
David Carradine? Yeah.
I heard his voice.
Yeah.
And I turned around and David Carradine was sitting right behind us with like eight kids.
Yeah.
Eight kids.
Wow. Going to see
The Other Boleyn Girl.
It was so bizarre.
It was bizarre.
Why was he bringing eight kids to The Other
I have no idea. I don't know about those Carradines.
Well,
God rest his soul, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously.
Let's pay our respects.
But they're into some funky shit.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
No, I think that's fair.
Yeah. I don't think we need to pretend that it's not.
Yeah, it's just weird.
I really, I don't know. The lyrics of this song are...
Oh, it's perfect.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly chosen.
It is perfectly chosen.
And being less versed in music than most things, would they do this song for the film, or was this an existing song?
This is an existing song.
This is licensed for the film, yeah.
Well, clearly, but I just wondered if they made it for it or not, because it does fit so well.
Yeah. Well, that's how you can tell that this movie was well made from every single angle and perspective, and it was, you know, it had a really long gestation period of being preconceived, you know, like to pick these songs over time, to pick every little detail, to pick the fonts for the credit. I mean, everything is spot on.
Like a chapter one, circle number two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what it is. And what's great is because, I mean, I think it helps that...
The city of Pasadena.
You're familiar with Quentin Tarantino's work, so you can get the idea of
his non-linear storytelling.
Thank you.
That was really fresh for me because I had never seen a Tarantino
movie. Right. Yeah, I can imagine.
And did it work for you?
Yes, I loved it.
Okay, great.
But I think he does a different take on it for these two films.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't do it exactly the same way he does it in other films, which I like.
Yes.
Oh, yes. So love this effect.
I do too. I love that sound bite. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. And I love how it's carried through both films. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know what it means.
And that's
very 70s also.
Well, yep. It is a piece of music from something in the 70s. And we're right into it. We are right into
it. Right. The action. You know what kind of movie this is.
I love that Vernita just said, hi-ya.
Yeah.
The most classic thing to yell when you're using karate on somebody.
Yeah.
Ow.
Man.
And we also know what kind of, you know, martial artist fighter, you know, she is. That's revealed to us right away. She's probably trained in some sort of karate, and she's probably, but in that kind of way where it's the stereotypical way you would think of it. She's not as diverse as the bride. She's not, you know, I mean, it kind of gives you a take into her character.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
But two, it's also an homage.
To
every kind of, like, you know, Hong Kong action film ever.
But of course they choose her to do it.
Right. Yeah.
Because they don't have Oren Ishii do stuff like that, you know? So it's interesting how that's assigned.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I like how he mixes up things like that.
I mean, the whole knife and pan fight.
Thing. Yeah. Yeah. That's...
I mean, but it just introduces us to the great fight choreography that's in this film and also how they coordinated it in terms of shooting it. I mean, it was amazing.
With the awesome Zoe Bell. Get it, Zoe Bell.
Now, Kenna, where is Zoe Bell, and when is it Zoe Bell? When's it?
I think if you can't see Uma's face, it's probably Zoe Bell.
Oh, wow.
She did an excellent job on this film, and there's a really good documentary out, and the name of it is escaping me right now, but it's about stunt women, and it features two women. One of them is the woman who had done all the stunts for the Linda Carter Wonder Woman show and had done stunts for various films and TV shows, one of the most used women stunt women, and the other person is Zoe Bell, and they're following her, but they start following her during Xena, and at the end of the documentary you see her get this job.
Oh wow.
So if that's something that would interest anyone, I suggest you look it up. I can't think of what it's called, but it should be pretty easy to find.
I'm gonna look it up. That sounds cool.
The kid comes in, it's like, oh my god.
And they're just both covered in blood.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
Nothing's wrong.
With a strange woman who's also covered in blood. Interesting little point of note detail.
Yes.
Beatrix, spoiler, is wearing Taekwondo competition shoes.
Oh.
Yeah. Ah. Adidas makes a line of martial arts shoes that are good for...
Nice.
All kinds of good stuff.
They basically bleeped out her name.
Yeah, yes. That was the first.
I spoiled it. Yay.
What? We've all seen this.
But I like that he does that, you know?
Me too.
I love that's a very Tarantinoism, you know, to be like...
Adds a little mystery thing.
Right, and it's blatant.
Oh, why?
They do say her name. We're just going to beep it out.
Yeah.
Right.
We're not going to try to be all...
Though, actually, Bill, at the beginning, he did call her by her last name.
Kiddo.
He called her Kiddo.
Well, that he calls her Kiddo this whole movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Which
you're not sure. You don't know.
When I finally got to the second movie, I did think that her name was going to have something to do with Kiddo.
Yeah.
Just because I'd seen this movie so many times in the year leading up to the second part coming out, that I did think it had something to do with Kiddo. So I was very gratified by that. But I would never have guessed Beatrix.
Well, and you must have analyzed the hell out of this film. Just the fact that you went into film school right at the beginning.
Right.
It's Tarantino's newest film, and it's groundbreaking again.
I mean, we watched this all the time.
It had to be the poster, you know, movie for that year.
See,
huh?
See, this reminds me of in film school, the film that we watched was Raiders.
Oh. Right, so it would have been that.
Picked
to me,
Raiders apart completely over and over and over again. And that in Star Wars.
It's a good time.
It's just that the way they descend into, we're going to be normal now.
It's because they have rules.
Or maybe.
Yeah. And that's what I like.
Or a sense of honor. I love how they have this whole sense of sort of warrior ethics and honor and respecting your enemy kind of thing. I think that adds such a solidity to any action film.
And they're just assassins. That's what I also like in all of this, because this isn't an action film about bad guys versus good guys or, you know, the side of the law or whatever. I mean, these are just assassins.
Mm-hmm. Killers. You
know? Yeah, just killers for whatever reason. We don't know. But it's nice to have that kind of balance of seeing that they do have a code.
Well, and that they work they used to work together. So you get a sense of that right here.
Right.
And what's nice is that the great thing is we came into the whole scene fighting like crap, and now they're not fighting. So once again, it goes back to the Tarantino thing. If you know something's going to happen, you're just on edge waiting for it to happen. And you're just waiting for we all know what happens. But that's what's great, because he just sets up the tension and then he lets everyone play it out. It's like, okay, I know I'm going to do this, and which is great, because that's, you know, that's what movies are about suspense.
Right. Well, and you get so, I mean, how many minutes are we into this movie? Like 10? And
11.
So much has already been exposed, even when they're not talking. Yep. Even, you know, during the fighting. It's just, it's brilliant.
And even with just having it be Vernita first with the child, because it ends with essentially Beatrix essentially gaining her child back.
Right.
It comes all back of, you know, getting her daughter back in volume two.
Well, and have you heard about Kill Bill 3?
What?
I heard there was a rumor that they were going to.
Well, they're gonna supposedly they're gonna follow Vivica, a Fox's
daughter, trying to go and kill Beatrix.
Yeah, which I don't know if I'm.
I'm not really. I like to the imagination of thinking. You know, I love that part that's coming up here in just a second, where she puts the challenge to the daughter, and you know, I like thinking about it happening rather than seeing it.
Mm. Exactly.
It could be good though.
It could be good.
I mean, it's got potential for a good story.
Sure.
On top of which, Beatrix's daughter is roughly the same age, maybe only different by a year or two than.
Right.
No, they say that they're the same age.
Pretty same.
It just has.
They're 4 years old.
Yeah,
I wouldn't completely count it out. I just have to see how it all rolls out. I mean, if you know, it's just hard when you have, and this happens a lot in films, when you add on a chunk of a story like much later on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you mean like
don't say it,
Crystal Skull.
Okay. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, Phantom Menace?
Oh, God. Thank you. Appreciate you going there.
I don't think our listeners really needed examples per se, Sarah.
I was trying to find the worst example.
Thank you, Heidi.
I was trying to find the worst example ever. Maybe Godfather Part 3?
No, I think you hit it already.
I think Godfather Part 3 actually would fall into that same category. No?
No, because I think that's one of Al Pacino's greatest performances.
Oh,
okay.
Nice. Touche, Taylor Tomlin.
I
kind of like that film. You know.
So
he turns it on in that movie.
And kaboom!
Kaboom!
Okay,
yeah,
she pulls the kaboom cereal out.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you think with all that like stuff she was saying, do you think that was just meant to lull her into a sense of complacency?
I think it's both.
Or do you think she maybe just remembered? Oh yeah, I have a gun hidden in there.
It's both. It's both.
I think she always knew where she has the guns.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's ever
They're
something
trained
that's
assassins.
Not. Yeah. She knows where that stuff is.
I guess so. But, you know, you start living the suburban life, you can slip a little.
Love that.
I know.
Wow.
I will get
and
you
yep.
with a coffee cup and a knife because
right, right?
I am the bride.
That's right.
I'm Black Mamba.
Nice.
You don't mess with me.
I mean, in a way, okay, do you think she would have let her go?
No.
Or do you think she was going to kill her anyway?
She was always going to kill her anyway.
Okay.
It's not personal, but it is.
It's revenge.
It is revenge.
And it's a dish best served cold.
Yep. And then there's the
real cold.
Yep. Wow.
I love that down shot of the cereal.
Now, how is it that she missed Beatrix? She should have gotten her. I mean, she is an assassin.
Living the suburban life, getting soft.
Oh, okay. The skills weren't there.
Maybe she was just going to try to scare her off. You know, maybe that was part of it too. Like she didn't want to perpetuate any more of this cycle.
I mean, you start an attack again.
Yeah.
You better expect a counterattack.
Exactly.
Maybe it was just the cereal.
Yeah. Maybe it affected the
right. Yeah.
Maybe the type of gun that she used was like it looked like a pretty standard 2-inch barrel 38 special revolver. Those are hard to shoot accurately at any distance
at
the best of times, even without your hand in a cereal box, so you can't really tell where it's pointing. Like, that would be challenging.
Yeah.
Even from that far away, that's still pretty far for that weapon. So I could attribute it. I mean, think about how little you have to move your hand for your finger to not be pointing at something 10 feet away anymore.
Right, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, easily somebody could miss. Easily.
Oh, here's the challenge.
Yeah. That's the challenge.
Setting up for the third one.
But it tells you a little bit more about how they work. It tells you a little bit more about what kind of woman she is.
Yeah.
This is my code.
Because she could very easily kill the daughter right now and not worry about it.
And notice all the all the cereals on the ground like the glass was on the ground in the living room.
Right.
Now this I believe this quote comes from the Book of Five Rings, Miyamoto Musashi.
No,
it's one of the classic works of Japanese literature. He talks all about strategy and samurai code.
Okay.
All right, And I love that we already know.
No, she's killed someone.
She already killed Oren,
which is interesting because that's what we end the film on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's why I like that. I think it gives a lot of, I don't know, I guess like clout or respect to the first,
to the first two that
she kills, though. Do you know what I mean? I think there's a reason that they're the top two on her list, and I think there's a reason why she only gets through two people in the first film.
Mm.
You know?
Well, I think it actually takes 4 hours for her to get through everybody. That's the whole thing.
Well, right, but I think it tells you what the level of importance she thought of knocking people out was. Right. And how difficult it would be. And I think she went for one of the hardest list. She went for the hardest one first.
Okay.
That makes sense. And also the one that would have more resources to prepare for her coming to make it even harder to get her sword.
Right, because if she knows she can go get the hardest one first, then she can kill Bill.
Right.
Right.
You know, and that she's proven to everyone that she's a real threat.
Yeah. Well, and she has to go get her weapon, too.
I like that he's got four pairs of sunglasses.
Michael Parks.
Who plays two roles in the films. Mm-hmm. He plays this one, and then he's in Volume 2. And I think in here, he's playing the same character that he does in From Dusk Till Dawn and also in the Planet Terror, or not in the Grindhouse films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it's the same character.
Wait, who did he play in the second one? I'm blanking right now.
He played the second Kill Bill.
Yeah,
he plays the old
Latino gentleman.
Yes. Yeah,
towards the end.
Oh yeah, he does. Look at that. That's funny.
I'm trying to think of a more descriptive way to explain.
When we get to it, we'll point it out.
Yeah, the old.
And
pimp.
At first, I wasn't sure. It's like, is that Michael Parks?
The old. Oh man, the old it is. Pimp in whatever country that was.
Yeah, but the thing is that he plays the same character in like three different Quentin Tarantino films, essentially. Mm. Of course, from Dusk Till Dawn, he does die. So I guess that's the last in the chronology. Go figure that one.
Mm.
Well, Tarantino isn't famous for respecting chronology or timeline.
I think that's a great part. So now we get to see the scene of the crime. We go all the way back. So it's just interesting that he started off with Vernita.
Right.
But I like it.
Well, because you got to start out. I mean, you don't have to.
Well, I think. But I think thematically.
I think it sets a tone.
He started out with the whole thing about the mother and the daughter, which is where we end up. And that's why it made sense to
go to her next.
To go to her first.
In
the chronology of the... Well, not in how we see the film, but in the chronology of the film, it doesn't have to be, which makes it interesting.
I thought, like, this was challenging for me only because we start by seeing that she's seemingly killed, and then the next scene is her having this battle seemingly unhurt.
Right.
So it's questions, it's asking, what happened when, and how did, well, and I think that's what's good storytelling about
it totally
this. It's because right when you as a viewer get to a point when you are begging for certain questions to be answered, that's when he gives you it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And you know, of course, when you see the opening scene, the first thing you think of is, oh, I want to see right away what happened to this. But he takes you out of it and gives you something else. He gives you the woman who's made it through that.
Right.
Now you want to know.
How'd she get there? Exactly.
You know, how did she make it through that? How is she not dead? And, but you also already know why she's got such a big beef right away, too. You know? But then that's even set up. How does she get the pussy wagon? Because it's obviously such like a blatant throw in your face type of a thing. So now you've got more questions. And he feeds you these answers at the same pace that he's creating new questions in the back of your head, making this an interactive experience. You're not just like, you know, zoned out watching this. You are participating. That's why I think it's such a good film.
But he does that also in Pulp Fiction, too.
Right. Yes, he does.
I mean, to hear, he definitely extends and expands on it.
Now, see, something that he doesn't explain that I am still curious about is exactly what part of her brain did she lose in that headshot, or how did she survive being shot in the head?
I love this. This is my favorite.
Because
this sequence, sorry.
Oh, yeah,
is
with the music coordination.
The whole
thing,
it's
from
great.
This point to the point when she gets in, like, drives away in the pussy wagon, this is like probably one of my favorite sequences of both films.
Mm. Oh wow!
Well, this one where he does the first split screen that we see in either film.
Yep.
And the jacket's awesome too. It almost looks like a cartoon.
Yeah.
Because it's drawn on.
Yep.
That's wonderful.
Right.
wonder if you thought of that.
And that's good, and that's a melody.
And that was just such a different role for her. And
actually, Daryl Hannah's awesome in this.
Actually, it's interesting what they did sound-wise there is they actually went from her whistling and they mixed it in with the actual original piece of music. And, of course, it's got that dream quality. Well, that's the great thing. If he's really great at identifying music, popular music,
or even not popular music.
Well, no, but, it was popular music at the time, to help express what's going on in a film and then constructs the scenes and the sequences around it, which is really, really cool.
Well, and then you love this, too, because you already know this lady isn't here for good. I mean, she's got an eye patch for, you know, like, you see it, everyone knows. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows what an eye patch means. You're up to no good.
Whenever you see someone with an eye patch, watch out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now we're really watching because we're like, uh-oh.
And she has something red in her syringe.
We know that she's there for bad, and we're hoping
she's got a cheesy
that she's going to wake up, you know?
A cheesy nurse's
right? And she, it's like she just went and bought that at the Halloween store for sure.
That's right.
And but I love the Red Cross on the iPad.
Yeah.
And,
but what's great is it sets us all also up for saying, well, how'd she lose her eye? Which, of course, we find out. We find out later. And then, of course, it becomes a thing even later. Well, I don't think I'm spoiling anything. When she loses her second eye, I thought that was brilliant. That was great. I didn't even see that one coming.
No.
But it's great. It's great writing.
Yeah.
L Driver. The name L Driver comes from when they were working on From Dusk Till Dawn. There was a guy they used to call L Driver, E-L. L Driver. Let's go here. Let's go there. So that's how it became. They came up with the character named L Driver.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Wow.
And I love the hate.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What's great is that this is such a different role for Daryl Hannah.
Yep.
She said that's why she took it. She wanted to play somebody that was just bad.
But horrible. It's great though, because again, it's just, you know, that Quentin Tarantino has such good taste in that everything he ever, because that's what he does. He just reincorporates things that of quality artistic value or just entertainment, and he brings them together, which is what that I like he does. Mm. But you know that this guy was sitting around watching Blade Runner and you know, he has that Daryl Hannah in his head.
Totally.
And he's sitting here casting this movie and he's like, oh, I need Daryl Hannah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's awesome.
Yeah. And it's totally obvious that that's the case. And yeah, you're right. That's beautiful. I love how he casts.
I mean, maybe he was thinking about Splash.
Yeah, maybe he was. Who knows?
Could have been.
Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or maybe what was that one where she was like a cave woman?
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Clan of the Cave Bear.
There you go.
Yeah.
Attack of the 50-Foot Woman?
the one that she did with Robert Redford. The really bad 80s.
Nobody knows what you're talking about.
Oh, she did some movie with Redford, which is forgettable. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
Now this is an interesting way of introducing Bill as somebody who's just a little bit more than a guy with a gun.
Yep.
He's got this very interesting ring. He clearly has some kind of weird eclectic style with the shirt,
but even the background, it's like that beautiful kind of wood inlay, and he's holding a sword
and while he's talking on the phone.
Right.
The symbol on it. Mm-hmm. So later on, we will know that he has one of those Hattori Hanzo swords.
Right.
You know, I love that kind of that style of not showing you who the bad guy is and only showing you his hands. Yep. You know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's somewhat James Bond.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. It's very gold. Which one was it that started in Doctor No? Was it the first one that they had Spectre, or was it later?
Spectre started, I don't remember if it was Doctor No, but definitely Infomercial with Love.
Yeah. Right.
Blofeld.
And even like older films, you know, they used to do that a lot, and a lot of like the pulp serials too, even. You know, there wasn't a lot of reveal of the bad guy.
And may I say something in Empire Strikes Back is not showing the Wampa. I like that.
Yeah.
It's better. Like not showing the monster, not showing the villain, something like that creates a sense of mystery.
Not showing the Emperor.
And
technically speaking, not showing Darth Vader. We don't see his face.
Yeah. Right.
We just see the mask.
Good point. We don't know what kind of person he is at all.
It's just more mystery.
Well, it's a matter of the reveal also, because usually, you know, good films, what they'll do is they'll hold back. You'll just see parts and parts, and the character will be revealed at the beginning. Here, we're getting it teased out. We literally do not see Bill for this entire film, though in the whole thing, you actually see him basically at the halfway point.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's just so much, there's so much between her and getting to Bill.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to be accomplished. She may have a list with just like a few numbers on it, but there's so much to do before you can get to Bill that I kind of like even the way it's set up in the movie on that point where we can't even get to Bill yet.
Man.
I love that it's a mosquito sucking on her blood that wakes her
and
up.
Super duper close up. I wonder if they made that up or if they just did it like an extreme close-up.
I think she's really brilliant right here.
This, yep.
She's brilliant.
This whole part where they're at the hospital.
Oh, wow.
And the part in the second film where she's buried alive.
Oh, yeah.
Are
when she's
her
buried.
Two best moments of her performing in anything I've ever seen before.
Right. Mm-hmm. This is pretty, I mean, this is awful and pretty cool that she just sees the whole thing with the bullet.
Yeah, she suddenly remembers, the very last.
Well, and she's really discovering all these things for herself. Right. She's not anticipating it.
She's got a steel plate in her hand.
Right.
Well, it's been so much time.
And, like, her
four
baby.
4 years, yeah.
I mean, look at how great she is right there.
Yeah.
She's looking for her baby, yeah. And yes, we're pausing for her performance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's just brilliant.
I remember seeing it in the theater and like feeling like my stomach just, it was so good.
Yeah. Well, because for her, it's been like a moment and the baby's gone and she knows it.
Yes. But she let herself really experience that. She didn't anticipate it. She just let herself go through it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Good
and
point.
This is a long shot right now. We're already going into almost like a minute.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah, and now she's reading the lines on her hands to tell. That's brilliant. Yep. It's like she knows. She's very, very knowledgeable in all kinds of things that can assist her as an assassin. And
yeah,
make
so
her
she knows
the perfect
time.
Killer.
Time.
She can. Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Okay.
And great face right there too. Mm-hmm.
And then, like another element to her skill, suddenly she pretends like she's dead again, and she can slow her heart rate down really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
This is still part of the sequence.
Yep.
This is still part of the
and
sequence.
And I just remember seeing this and just being totally disgusted.
And that's what I'll call successful filmmaking.
Yep.
It's just he makes it disgusting because it truly is disgusting.
But you get introduced to the idea, and it's disgusting, but then right away, you're like, that's really not that surprising, which is what makes
exactly.
it really freaky. Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's the whole
you're
thing,
like, because you've never heard about this, but you're like, this probably happened
and
somewhere.
And then just when you get to the moment where you're like, really like pitting in your stomach, feeling disgusted, you're like, oh, wait, but that's the bride,
that's
not
the
just
bride.
Any other girl.
Right. Right.
This is going to turn out okay.
He's going to get his comeuppance.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. You said it's the whole point is they can play it out as long. You know exactly what's going to happen to him.
Right. Because it's the bride. It's like this great feeling. I actually, ever since this movie, anytime I watch any sort of like horror movie or, you know, something like suspenseful or anything like that, or watch a movie, read a comic, anything. I watch To Catch a Predator and I get scared at home. You know, anytime like that, I always think, what would happen if these people went up against the bride? I always think that.
That's funny. Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Like, if it wasn't a gross enough and disgusting enough situation already, they've got to have a close-up of a can of Vaseline with hair on it.
Because of course it does. Because that's what kind of guys these guys are.
Right. Sure.
Right.
I mean,
it's just all disgusting.
And he's
disgusting.
Just, ugh.
Oh, but you can't even wait right here.
Yeah.
It's just so exciting.
Like,
and the
how
shot.
Is she
what's
going,
she
going
to do
how
him
is she going
of
to
her
kill
biting
him?
His lip?
Yeah.
And it's great because we don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
And then this song. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, the blood.
That was a great way to get out of it. You cut to black and then you just cut
and then
to
you're
the
like,
end. And, she's
and
got
then she's like, oh,
her.
She can't walk.
Yeah, that's right. You can't
oh,
walk.
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Which is, again, a great thing that they even think about in this film.
Exactly.
Because
most films should just start walking.
She'd just start walking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Which
makes
actually,
you believe it a lot more.
And it takes away from how awesome she is.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that she can't walk, seeing her get her feeling back.
Actually makes
ass.
Her more awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like if she would have just got up and walked out of there, people wouldn't have thought. You don't think about the challenge. You don't think about the struggle.
Mm-mm.
And now here she is. She doesn't have legs, and is how and you like how is she going to do it? But if anyone can do it, it's probably going to be her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think I remember how she does this.
Oh yeah,
this music's also awesome.
It's so great.
Yeah.
He's like, what the hell happened? And slow-mo pan.
And I love it when she puts on those sunglasses. Yep. Oh, it's so awesome. Oh,
that's right.
She puts on.
That's right.
Here she goes.
Yeah. Oh. Yep.
Nice.
Bye-bye, Achilles tendon.
And then this was just
the best.
It's so good.
I guess he got a head injury from hitting the floor, right? From the fall.
Oh.
Oh, and she thinks he knows where Bill is.
Well, because she doesn't realize so much time has passed.
But it doesn't make a difference because she still knows what he was doing, so she doesn't give a crap.
Well, right, of course.
Well, but that doesn't come back to her until a second from now.
Yep, here it comes.
Yep.
But. Oh, yeah. Now she's remembering that.
And she does that good, too, remembering. Yeah. Uma Thurman, like, she's really underrated, man.
I think, did she get nominated for this?
Oh, no.
No. Not the right kind
robbed.
Of movie.
Yeah, for
totally
real.
Robbed.
See, basically he...
Women don't get nominated for these kind of roles.
She totally needed to.
I mean, if she would have worked at some sort of like factory in the 1970s in a time when they weren't letting women work on the line or something, she totally would have gotten an Oscar nom.
Or played a lesbian...
To choose a random example.
Or gained a lot of weight.
Or played a lesbian serial
killer.
Right,
or lost a lot of weight. Yeah, that
or
too.
Got
that
a
too.
Nose job, did something with a bad nose. When you're very pretty.
But see, she really rose to the occasion in this because I've seen her do other things where she's not very good.
Yep, that's true.
Like Henry and June, she's god awful in it.
Yep.
But here, she's brilliant.
She's good at this kind of thing.
And
too.
I think her and Quentin just understand each other and work really well together. And they did create this character together.
It was out of Pulp Fiction. But in Pulp Fiction, she was very good also.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So they have chemistry. They just.
Yeah.
Mm hmm. Well, and stuff can grow out of that, like a good chemistry between a director and an actor that you can't get just by having good actors and good directors together.
Yeah.
But that's the whole thing, too, is, you know, you can play so many roles, but some roles are perfect and some roles will make your career because they are ideally suited to who you are. But you can play lots of
other
things.
Or you understand them and you can conceptualize it.
Right.
Just in case we didn't know which one this was.
But I love how easy it is. And I love that she just gets this like feeling. She looks at the car. She looks at the keys in her hand. She's like, oh, finally, something fucking easy.
Yeah.
I like that music cut, by the way. Because it's like building, and then you get cut to the inside of the thing and it just goes away.
And then here it is.
We're going to something
great
different
at it. Yeah,
this is
at
the
it.
Moment where you really, you've seen her deal with a lot of stuff. You've already seen her overcome so much. But I feel like this is the moment where you really get to see like what she's made out of inside. Mm-hmm. Like what kind of like tough, hard as nails is the center of her core. Because she is just going to make that toe wiggle.
Right. And two, like this I think expands on her knowledge and just eclectic skills with the whole fact that she's an assassin. Like she has studied and learned all kinds of different things.
Yeah,
she can actually
trained.
Do physical therapy on herself in this rare circumstance where she's been in a coma and her legs don't work. I mean, I think that's, I just love that they're painting this picture of her being this like unstoppable assassin because she can do anything. You
and she doesn't need anyone's help.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And when she does need help, it's important. You know, it's, I don't know.
Right, and going back to Henry and June, the thing is...
Although her feet look a little too manicured. That's one thing that always bothers me about this.
That bothered me, too. I was like, why are her toes painted?
I didn't think about that.
I didn't think about that either.
They're, like, too perfect looking. Yeah. It's just that it's, like, toes just don't look that clean.
Especially after being in a coma.
And clearly no one was taking good care of her.
Mm-hmm. Look, you know, she has a nice gloss.
Nah.
They're all, like, perfectly trimmed and filed. There's no cuticles growing over.
No,
you know what I got out of
that? That bothered me, too.
What I got out of the close-up is she has weird-looking toes.
Yeah.
But extremely clear and clean.
You have a good point, but I didn't get that at all.
If you notice, you know, Quentin Tarantino has a thing for her feet. Like in Pulp Fiction?
Yeah,
it's
totally.
Weird. The first shot of her in Pulp Fiction is her feet.
He also has a thing for totally fucking her up.
Yeah.
Just making her look god-awful.
But that's what I like about her. Yeah. I like that she's not afraid to look ugly.
No, that's
in
why.
In any kind of way. Yep. And that's why she always looks good. I'm not. Right. That's exactly what it is. Because she's just not afraid.
Right.
And you know, little different direction. Yeah. I love, like, one of my favorite Seagal films is Hard to Kill. I don't know if you guys ever saw that, but he was in a coma in that one, too. He was attacked by these gunmen, and his wife was killed in front of his eyes, and then he was, like, shot up, and he was in a coma for 7 years. And there's other films that you know, the hero gets hurt really bad, and then they have to train and like come back out of it. Everyone thinks they're dead, and they come back to life essentially. And I just love that. That's a that's a great like action film element that he again is using and you know paying homage to a lot of different films on.
Rebirth. Like
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, it's that whole Jesus thing.
The Phoenix.
Yeah. Oh, you want to take it all the way to Jesus now? Okay.
Taking it all the way to Jesus. Hey. Tarantino to Jesus.
That's right.
You heard it here first. But I like that they used it because now, curious, we want to know all about the assassination squad.
Right.
And now, while time's passing, because she's trying to get that toe to wiggle,
we're going to get more information.
More information.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And I love that we go into anime.
Yep.
Because it would not have been as effective.
Oh, no.
That's when my brains got on the chair behind me.
That's when mine started high-fiving each other.
I thought it was...
I thought it was great.
I thought it was just damn really cool.
It's like, oh, we're busting into this kind of storytelling now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very
natural-born killers, in a way.
But you know, but it's very, but it's very good anime. That's what
very good anime. Very of course, it's Tarantino.
Very, very good.
Do you, any idea who he got to do the?
You know, I
animation?
Did. I have looked it up before. I can't recall off the top of my head right now. Mm. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
And this music intense, again.
Oh, brilliant!
Really beautiful. Well,
it's very. It's very Western. It's the whole thing. And actually, this is. It's not quite. I mean, this is a little like. It's like motion comics, actually.
Yeah.
This is done in the style of motion comics. Yep. So it's not full.
And before that was even really popular, too.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's done well. And so that's why I think makes it really effective, because it also gives that sense of almost being like a movie, too. And also the way they move the camera in this is just great. Wow.
Interesting how some of the characters are more detailed than others.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. almost like her memory as a little kid.
Yeah, she
is
remembers
better
some
or worse than some on some people.
Actually, let's be clear. Whose memory is this? This is Oren's memory, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now, this part always baffled me. They are suggesting that this guy is Bill, right? Like, I thought that it was supposed to be a young Bill that killed him.
No.
I kind of wondered how that connected back.
No, I don't think it's Bill.
I don't think it's Bill.
So do you think he has a Hanzo sword then? Because they show the same symbol on the sword later. And a similar ring.
Yeah, I think the guy just has a Hanzo sword too.
Well, and she
thinks that's her connection to it.
Exactly, because she says at the end that was a Hattori Hanzo sword. Because she knows what those swords can do.
Mm, right.
Right.
But now, all we've seen, when I first saw this, all we've seen of Bill so far is a
whimper.
Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful.
All we've seen is a ring and a cuffed shirt and suit and then the sword.
And
so
the
when
shoes.
They showed this... Right, but barely. And so when they show this, and they're showcasing the sword, they're showcasing the ring, they're showcasing a suit type of thing, I put that together as it was Bill, a younger Bill.
It was Bill. Okay, so it was Bill that killed.
Yeah.
Well.
No,
I don't think so.
It's a different sword.
It's a different sword. It's a totally different guy.
Yeah, it's a different. I think it is a different guy, because I think.
And she has revenge on this guy.
But
yeah,
see,
that's the whole thing, yeah.
She has revenge on this guy?
She kills him, I think.
Isn't that what happened?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she kills him.
Is he the guy in the council that she kills? Or you mean like later?
I think this all happens in this vignette.
In the animated sequence, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
She kills the swordsman.
She kills everybody.
I think she kills everybody.
Yeah. Mm, okay. I'm not sure.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it in quite a while, but I thought so.
Pretty sure she kills the older guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then
totally kills the older guy.
And then two guys that run in. And that's it. I don't think they show her killing that guy. But anyway, that's what I got out of it the first time I saw it. I thought it was Bill, and I kind of wondered how that connected.
What is that kind of scar in his skull?
Well, he had a massive injury before, I guess.
Yeah.
Or it's just a really weird part.
This shot is just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is almost like
she's
being bathed in blood.
It's
like
also...
she's almost having a rebirth moment.
It's also really smart, too, because you could not have gotten a performance out of a child actor like that.
No, you can't.
And it's really smart to do it this way.
And also, the thing is, it's not...
Oh, my gosh. It's just gorgeous animation.
Yeah.
It's not kiddos. I mean, it's not the bride's experience. So in a way, this allows us to have the experience separately and more sympathetically than if it was with live action.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely sets it apart. And allows her to have essentially her own adventure, which is kind of a weird thing, because then she comes off as so unsympathetic.
I loved this too.
I love the Western style music. Yeah. It's amazing. It really is. I actually think this is my favorite part of the film. Not that the rest of the film isn't great, but
a little laugh.
Yeah, is the Western music comes back in volume two.
What mm-hmm. a like, but I love all of this because it's such a big setup again. Why Oreni Shii is the number one person to go after?
Such
first.
A badass,
right? Like we're gonna go for the hardest person first to prove to everyone what I can do. I think she actually even says that at some point in this film too. Oh, okay. That she does that.
Well, and Oren is also somebody who understands revenge.
Yep, the same way.
That's how she was born as an assassin.
Right. So
well, and that's why when they're fighting at the end outside, I mean, they have like the same, they understand each other.
They understand each other.
And she gives her respectful death, exactly. Which she doesn't give anybody else.
Right.
Oh. Good point.
Yep.
Because they're cut from the same cloth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Familiar?
Yeah. It's just so like cold-blooded. Yeah. It's just like you.
But it's interesting. It's like, you know, she, the blood spraying, yeah. Which is very much a Hong Kong kung fu flick tradition.
Totally.
Yeah,
well, that's the over amount of blood is totally traditional of that. And samurai films.
Yep,
and
yep,
the
samurai
Hong
films
kung
as well.
Fu.
But
yeah.
It's going to set us up for the
what
scene
happens,
later.
Yeah.
We have,
right now we're more prepared with the idea.
Like the idea is when there being
lots of blood, exactly.
When we're doing sword fighting in Asia, we have blood.
Yeah. And she's
it's the rules.
And I love the way she looks at them right now. Yeah,
so
she just tilts her head over.
Yeah.
I'd be afraid to shoot at that girl.
Yeah, me too.
How did they miss?
She was just
possessed.
Quick enough to
she's
duck
she's
behind
gone.
The bed.
Yeah.
Oh, she could.
And by the way, the gun she has underneath there, you can tell by the triangular shape, is a Desert Eagle. The smallest caliber those come in is .357 Magnum.
Ooh. Hence the
leg being right. The more popular calibers are .44 and, well, then it would have been .44 Mag.
Right.
They also have it in .50.
Yeah. Love her just sitting there.
Yeah. And so calm.
And again, another thing that makes me feel, I don't know, I just, there's something about like these women just being so empowered and a child mm-hmm. being so empowered that mm-hmm. it's just crazy.
Which I agree with, but then the flip side is that what you're saying, basically, for the most part, women usually are not empowered in movies, much less girls.
Or if they are...
Not in this way.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
They're not allowed to be cold-blooded killers like men are.
Right.
You know?
But that's my point.
And nor are they allowed to seek revenge, or nor are they allowed to be the kind of person who can be shot and get back up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you'll watch... A Nightmare on Elm Street movie, and or even like Friday the 13th, you know, and you see those kind of like psychotic, crazy killers get killed over and over again, but yet they're not dead. You know, they just keep on getting back up and chasing someone down again.
Right.
You never see a woman, let alone a child, in that kind of role.
Yeah.
Right.
You can't knock them down. They just get back up.
Right.
This is creative too, where they're showing the bride scene a little bit more than we've seen so far. But again, in anime form.
Well, essentially from Oren's point
from
of view.
Her,
right, because it's still part of her
so
story.
In a way, maybe Oren sees her life as...
And then again, we're back to this. Oh, well, yeah, she's trying to...
But maybe Oren herself, maybe the reason why that fits in thematically is that Oren actually sees her life as a bit of a myth, a legend, so to speak, that would be dramatized.
Sure, and I'm sure other people do as well. Yeah. I think that might be something that... Yes, you got that toe to wiggle.
Yep.
Yes, you did. You are going to kill Bill. Yes.
Like, they just skip ahead to 13 hours later.
Yeah. And she's walking.
Yep. And took her 13 hours.
But she did it.
But she did it. Because she sat there the whole time and worked it out.
Yep.
Because
she's
bride.
She's not a victim.
And she's not a victim. Thank you.
She can take care of herself.
She can take care of herself. She's going to drive that pussy wagon.
Yeah.
And she's going to go kill somebody. Love it.
Love it.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
But I do think with Oren, there is almost a little bit back to that whole anime thing, the legend or whatever. I think that that's even a little bit, the legend of her is is something created outside of herself that people even have put on her in general that she's trying to live up to.
Well, I think that's why they let her take over that. What's the council she takes over that the one guy's upset about?
The Japanese one. Yeah. She's like half Chinese.
But because she has that legend behind her, that's why they let her do it.
Okay, so that's a good way to put it. Yeah, exactly. How you consider, in other words, it's not how she sees herself, it's how she's let everyone see her. And that builds on. Okay, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Which is good.
Nice.
Yeah, this is a great scene.
This is a great scene too.
This
great
competes
scene.
With
see from
a couple others for my favorite. Really,
really.
I mean, this is just well. It's
this scene,
the, it's
this scene
the,
drags a little for me.
Well, but
well,
it's
the
flip flop. It's the you think he's just some dude selling sushi, and she
comes
across
it.
As the flirty American, and suddenly it turns into this assassin.
I got that pretty quickly, but it's
well,
still,
yeah, but it's
for, it still
I just
felt
love
like it still felt
I love
like
it.
For me.
I think it's a nice break.
Me
because
too.
Because you get to see her just be herself and not this person on this like revenge warpath for a second, even though that's why she's here.
Okay.
But once they break down this little like facade they've got going, she can really talk to him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who else can she really talk to in these movies? You know, like she's got no one.
Right.
Okay. All right. I'll buy that. I'll buy that. Okay. It gives us a break.
Plus, it gives her a break, for God's sake.
Well,
give her a break.
Yeah. Well, also, I like that nothing's really happening in this scene at first, but I'm totally entertained by everybody.
And we all need a deep breath right here because we are about to go into like the sword fighting ridiculousness of a century. That's like 30 minutes straight
now, this
of
is
sword
sunny,
fighting.
Of death. This is
and blood.
Maybe longer than 30 minutes.
This is Sonny Chiba, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. Just making sure. See, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Watching this, I'm like, okay. It's a guy. Mm-hmm. It's a dude.
Right.
I mean,
no,
I
didn't
I get
know
the,
that he was famous
idea.
Before. Famous action film, action
I mean,
TV
found,
star, right?
I found out after. I don't know, but I, you know, clearly of some repute. And I got the feeling going into this scene, it's like, okay, there's something more that she's going to get from him. He's not just a, you know, a guy at a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably maybe why it dragged for you the first time. Like, I think I remember seeing this the first time and wondering, where are they taking this? What's going on with this?
Right.
That's how I felt. Yeah, exactly.
And it just seems like it's extremely protracted and it hasn't come to a point yet. And that's when they suddenly she started speaking in Japanese and started taking it in a different direction.
Right.
But I can see why she, as you know, this assassin killer would take any opportunity she could to be a normal person for a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, because she can be.
I mean,
here. That's
maybe
the whole
it's
thing.
Like playing a game, but
yeah.
I mean, I think I would. Because how often do you get to do that? I mean, she could have walked in and just started speaking Japanese
right
away and been like, what's up? You know.
Well, and then this is also a tactic. You know, this is so she can observe him, observe how the situation is, really get a lay of the land, know where the exits are, know who else is there. I mean, if you just come in all business, that's where you're going to be at right away. You don't get a moment to really observe anything.
That's a good point.
Well, also, she kind of endears him towards her in a way, too, which I really
like me. Yeah, you want to help me.
Yep.
Right.
You want to give me what I want.
You want to make a sword that you haven't made in 30 years or something like that.
But I also think that and like without getting too like, you know, Gloria Steinem on us all, I think that that's a feminine perspective to do about something.
Yeah.
Which
instead of going in there and being like all business right away and being like, I'm here about the sword, blah, 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 blah. She did what Taylor just mentioned, and she goes in there and she endears herself to him, which might actually make all of this a lot easier in the long run, because if he likes her and feels like he wants to help her from the get-go, then maybe he will just help her and she won't have to fight him or fight anybody.
All right. Oh, I have no argument with that.
Yeah.
No, I could totally see that pace. It's just somehow...
This is a funny scene, though.
Yeah, it is.
The two guys.
Yep. Like,
and this is...
Okay, all right.
I love this part right here.
It's almost a grumpy old man kind of thing.
I love it when you hear the tea drop in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
love that.
Yeah, that's perfect punctuation.
And then this is where the scene quote unquote starts. So, no, I'm not arguing with her tactics. It was just something about the beginning of it that just didn't grab me like everything else had grabbed me so far in the film. That's all.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
the tea drop.
The tea drops in the background.
Now he's like, oh, this could be ugly. Because she doesn't know if he's going to kill her for knowing.
But She robbed. She was robbed, completely robbed.
Totally. Because look at that. She's fantastic. Communicating everything in her eyes, all the pain she's gone through, all of the desire to get her revenge and everything.
Ms. Thurman,
right,
you did an awesome job. Awesome.
She did.
Awesome.
She did.
She was awesome.
She turned it on.
I'm verklempt.
Talk amongst yourselves.
I love like the sacred feeling of this set.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It does. And in the meantime, they've got underwear hanging on hangers in the background.
Right. But
it's
still
like so
really
normal.
But
it's, so
but it's sacred.
Simple. Sacred. Yep. Yeah. At the same time. Good way to put it. And here, like, all these just priceless, you know, legendary swords just there, you know.
What's also interesting...
just on the wall.
Yeah.
In the attic.
Well, right. they're hidden because, I mean, I think as he says, I don't remember exactly how he says
he
it, but...
He keeps them for sentimental value.
For sentimental value because he has turned away from violence.
Right.
Because...
Mm-hmm.
He pledged to God not to do it.
Right, exactly. And that's the whole thing. And that's the interesting part is that but she actually gets him to see that what she's doing, in a sense, in my words, is not against nature, but is actually with nature. That this is a true and necessary thing.
Well, and if Bill didn't have such a reputation of being a horrible person and that Hattori Hanzo didn't know him as well, he may never have given her a sword.
Right.
You know?
Right.
He definitely would not have done it for just anyone.
That's a nice double exposure. That's a great,
really is.
That's a really great double exposure.
Yeah.
I love this too, because you get to see, like,
she wants to touch it.
This, but this really does, like, literally touch her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's...
You see what kind of a warrior she really is.
Well, and the kind of things that, like, jazz her up, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, this is... She almost cries just looking at the swords.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And she picks the one with the red ribbon.
Yep.
No, he told her to take it.
He told her to take that one? Okay.
She started to take a different one. He's like, no, try the second one down.
Okay.
Now it's his turn to just make sure that she really is someone who
the lighting
could
in here
use
is
the
great
sword.
Too.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I think that's what adds to that kind of heavenly, slats. You know, feeling.
Sure. Yeah.
It's Robert Richardson, who won Academy Award for The Aviator.
Oh,
I think a few years later.
Shine on. That's a really pretty sword.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Richardson.
Shine on.
It is.
Is that a Serenity reference?
Richardson did Inglourious did Inglourious Bastards too.
Oh, nice. Okay. I can see that.
I love the glow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is what I was talking about. Now he's making sure she actually is someone that can actually use it if he makes it for her.
I like that it's a baseball, a very American thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
yes,
well,
but the Japanese really love baseball.
Yeah, they love that baseball.
The Japanese love baseball, too. I was about to say that to you. You're correct. So it's a neat little confluence of cultures.
I just want to know why he has a baseball in his pocket.
In case the bride shows up looking for a sword.
Just in case. Always keep a baseball in your pocket.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a better weapon, you know?
Maybe.
You can just throw it at the back of someone's head.
Let me tell you, baseball will do a lot of damage, yes.
You know what would be a fun like side story is that like he went and reclaimed all the swords that he had made, and that's what those are. Like he had to go kill
her. I would read that.
Right?
I would read that ongoing
cool...
graphic novel.
Yeah,
that's type of a series, you know? Like that would be
that. And how many swords are there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
There's 24 swords.
The stories of Hattori Hanzo.
He keeps them there to remember how much blood.
The
was
trials,
killed.
The swords,
the swords of
Hattori
Hanzo.
That's right.
Mm.
There you
is
go.
Is anybody out there listening to this?
Please make that. We will read it.
Quentin Tarantino, you have a ready-made comic.
It sounds
comic.
Like this would be really good for maybe like a Dark Horse or an IDW.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I'm just saying, guys.
Totally go for it.
Just saying. Maybe Vertigo. You want to pick that up? I'd read it. You can send it to me for free.
Oh, by the way, while I'm thinking about it, this makes me think of, I just picked up a graphic novel, a little short one. It's The Shepherd's Tale. It's the lost tale of where Shepherd came from in Serenity.
Yeah, you read that, didn't you, Serge?
That.
Was it good?
I didn't know it was out there, and
excellent.
I just found it in a store. I'm like, oh, I gotta have it.
It's very good.
Gotta have it.
Makes me sad.
Mm.
Mm. I didn't read it. I'll have to borrow it.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me sad how many characters got killed off in that stupid movie.
I will lend it to you.
I love the movie.
And another thing, another story where characters just get killed off.
It's interesting that the picture.
Yes.
We don't really know.
Here
we
go.
Know there's...
He knows
he
wants
Bill.
To kill. Yep.
He knows.
I And he's like, if it's this man.
He puts a dot over. Well, actually, it's not even a dot. No. A little slash. That's nice.
It's a very Japanese looking.
Exactly.
Dot
exactly.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
When you're just like, what happened between them?
Right.
Right. Know? Yeah. Well, I think I already know. Yep. I think Kitori Hanzo taught him how to fight, and Bill became a monster, and he blames himself for it.
Sure.
And he can't, like, reconcile. Sure. And this is why he doesn't make swords anymore. Yeah. And that's why he's going to let her go kill Bill.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is fair, and I always assumed that it was that Bill was the one that caused him to stop.
Yeah,
exactly.
Wow.
And I think just a general sense of remorse or something.
Well, I mean, the other thing is, you know, Bill allowed him to live or doesn't know where he lives. That's the thing, because...
Maybe Bill wouldn't kill him just out of respect, though,
too. Out of respect. Because there is a code.
Yeah, the weird code.
Whether or not he makes swords is up to him. I mean, he made one not only for Bill, but also for Bill's brother, remember?
Yeah.
Because Bud has one.
Yep.
Yeah.
So he made that one. So at some point, they were on good terms.
Right.
But whether he makes swords or not or something, that's up to him. I mean, why would Bill kill him for that, you know?
Right.
Who says they had a falling out except that, you know, difference of beliefs?
But he clearly believes... That killing Bill is the right thing to do. That Bill needs to be stopped.
Yes, clearly.
But maybe that's his last effort for redemption too. You know, like if he can assist in this, then he will be redeemed for all the things that he did.
Totally. All I was trying to say doesn't necessarily mean that Bill did something to him.
Right.
It could just be that he feels bad about it, and that you know they just
don't talk.
Right. Fell out of favor with each other.
I think that's putting it lightly.
Yeah, I think he does not like Bill very much.
Well, clearly. No, it's just what
Especially
brought it up was talking
about
Bill might kill him if he knew where he was. Well, I'm just saying I don't know that something like that had to happen where Bill would want to kill him. I think maybe he just had maybe a personal epiphany or something or saw some of the stuff Bill did or something, you know? Bill might know right where he is because he talks about is he still making sushi?
Okay. Yeah,
sushi
he does talk about
bad,
that.
You know,
okay.
But I think that goes back to the code. Like he wouldn't kill her when she was in the coma. You know,
right?
That's a good point.
Even though L would do it,
L would.
Well, she doesn't have code.
No,
which we know,
right?
But too, like,
and she doesn't have code because she can't see, but seriously, she couldn't see, and that's how she lost one eye, and that's how she loses all of her eyes because she can't see the code,
right?
And yeah, she does, you know.
That's deep. I like that.
Wow, but it's already in there. Thank you, Mrs. Kafka, for the all those symbolism lessons in English class in high school. Thank you. Oh, we tore everything apart to the point where it's like that. I'm done. I'm done with symbolism. No more. Unless it's appropriate. It's a really cool, intense sequence.
You notice he also doesn't make any mention of her being a woman and that being a thing at all.
No,
one way or the other. And he just calls her yellow-haired warrior.
Right.
Cool. Again, you know, it's good empowerment because it's not trying to make it a thing.
Right.
And what's cool is they took the time with the ceremony, which is something we never see.
Showdown.
Shadow of the House
Showdown.
Of
you know, mean the ceremony of receiving a sword
for
you?
They took the time. I mean, when do you see that? Take that time in an American film.
Yeah, good point.
Never.
I think most people are afraid to take that much time to communicate one thing in most films, especially an action film.
And that's why it was smart to split it up, you know?
Yeah, I don't have a problem. I would have liked to have seen the whole thing, but yeah, I can buy it.
It's really too bad, though, that some of the best art films or some of the best made films have to be made by people who have already done all this other stuff. So they have the leeway to do something like split it into two and decide these major creative things that normally a studio would be like, no, this is stupid. Why would we make two? Let's make one and see how it sells. And then maybe another one later and they would have been truncated and everything else.
Right.
Now I'm curious to see if there's a person at this council, if the person she kills is the guy. Let's see if he has the same like silver ring with the red dot. I feel like I saw that ring somewhere else.
Okay, we can look for it. Now, Gordon Liu is on the left, and that's on the right. Her name's Chiaki something. Mm. But she is wild. She was in Battle Royale. That's where she made her chops. She was awesome in that.
But what was it?
Battle Royale.
Oh.
I want to do that at some point.
I have never seen it.
Putting you guys all on notice to watch it, and we're going to try and do Battle Royale.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Man, they picked the guy with, like, the worst teeth they could find.
We were yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, see, that's just
wrong
mean
answer.
And gratuitous. I know, right?
She is just cold. Oh, man.
I believe he plays two roles in this, too.
Yeah, he plays Paime.
In Kill Bill 2. Yeah, her trainer.
Yeah, he has two roles. Yeah, exactly.
I love
her master.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
So, Heidi, you're saying that you think the person she kills here was the guy that killed her dad with the sword and all?
I mean, I guess I thought he'd been killed in the anime part, but now, obviously, that didn't happen. I just feel like she did kill that guy, but maybe you've got a solid argument.
Right. Maybe it was.
For being Bill, I'm not
sure. Maybe it was Bill.
I always thought it was, but it never made sense either, because, like, why would she work for him later if she knew? But they really make a point of, like, showcasing the sword and the rings and his face and everything, like he's going to come back later somehow.
Right.
But he also looked really Asian to
exactly.
me.
Exactly. I was just going
to
say that.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if they wanted it to be Bill, they would have made him look a lot more...
American.
Maybe.
Well, right.
But
David
Carradine's
got
gone
a bit of,
way,
that, bit of that Asian look.
Yeah.
He did do Kung Fu.
Exactly.
And it's very stylized anime, too. I mean, you can't tell a lot of things in that.
I love how she just takes control of the whole thing very calmly.
Mm-hmm.
And then he makes the one mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he brings up that she's part Chinese, right?
Right, yeah.
Right. Okay.
His
the
little
fan.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's great is that here, this is all in Japanese. I don't understand a word. I could read the subtitles, but I still get what's going on.
Yeah, because they're playing solid actions.
Right,
absolutely,
yeah.
Yeah.
I also will say that this is Lucy Liu's greatest portrayal of a character I've ever seen from her as well.
Yeah, I think so.
But you didn't like her in Charlie's Angels?
But the thing is the fact that he even gave her a shot. I mean, he had to rewrite this character for her.
Oh, really?
To make it fit her to fit her ethnic background.
Oh, but
that's the reason why her character is half Chinese, half Japanese. That whole thing was just made so that he could use her as an actress.
Wow.
And he wasn't actually going to use her, except that he...
And the blood.
And the
blood fountain.
The blood.
He saw her in the Charlie's Angel film, the first one, and then he said that, you know, he would want her in this movie.
Mm. I love that because it's like they probably have never seen her kill someone, because for her to get to this point, she had to be in the politics of the things and not doing the dirty work for a while.
Right.
For at least a couple of years.
Right.
So they would have known, but they would never have seen.
Yeah, physically
seen
it.
And here she is in this nice little kimono outfit and, you know, all that. She bare feet. She just, like, pads across the table and zoop. I mean, such a great juxtaposition of.
I love this part, too.
Yeah.
She's always so sincere.
And
everything she says here is fantastic. This is also, you can get this sound bite is on the soundtrack.
Right. Oh. Right. Except.
And just the subtext of everything is I'm the boss.
Right. And I love
don't
that.
Cross me.
She's not going to speak in Japanese. Yeah. No, no.
She's rubbing it in their faces. Like. Yeah. See?
And that's why she's the boss.
That's right. Yeah. That's great. I mean, that's we get to see her first bit of great acting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's really the most dangerous killers are the ones that you don't see coming.
Mm-hmm.
And Beatrix is like that, and Oren is like that.
Right.
I mean, like, a lot of them are able to do that kind of,
Well, they don't act badass and tough. They just are that.
Right.
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 Right. Or they act like they're just, I'm you know, this cute little blonde, or I'm this very proper Japanese woman or whatever, and then suddenly, you know, they chop pieces off of you.
I like that she's got her sword on the plane.
Yeah.
Just carrying
that
it.
Not just her, but everyone's got their sword
on the plane.
Exactly,
and you see that again at the end when she's coming back.
Yeah. It's a nice touch.
So it just lets us know it's a different universe.
Yes.
It really is.
It's the sword-carrying flight.
It's a sword-carrying universe.
Runs twice a day from LA to Tokyo.
It's the assassin. It's the assassin.
And I like that this is clear.
Assassin class.
But that's clearly a miniature shot, you know?
Yeah.
So there is definitely a level of unrealism to it.
Right.
Stylization. Yeah, I love that because you know what that's reminiscent of is all of the Godzilla movies.
True, too.
That's how you always see Tokyo in those.
So now we have this whole thing where they're driving through the city, this whole sequence. Well, essentially, it's where they're, you know, she's coming into town. I love that she's flying right over the town.
Well, because that's what it is. They're both coming.
They're both arriving at their
location. The two main
opponents
for the showdown.
The showdown.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the great thing is that they spend the time to do it. So.
Yeah.
Is that Sophie?
Is that Sophie? Yeah,
it
looks like Sophie.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Wow. So she's... And, of course, she's got the bike.
The bike.
The yellow-haired warrior, all in yellow.
With the suit that goes over the other suit.
You're so giddy. I love that.
But they all match.
The suit was from, I think, Bruce Lee wore this suit in...
Game of Death.
Yeah.
Game of Death?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's the one where he has to go through all the different levels, right? Yeah.
Right. Yep. Exactly the same. And I love that they cross... Like, it was a motorcycle outfit back then, I think. But I love that they're showing it being used that way now.
Right.
And as actually driving a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Ultimate.
Well, this is actually layers because that's a jacket and another pair of pants that she has over the other jacket and pair
of
pants.
Good point.
Oh, what?
And I think I didn't get a good look at them, but I'm pretty sure the shoes she's wearing right now are also martial arts shoes.
Yeah.
You can recognize them by the kind of pointed but rounded toe and the very thin sole.
Why do we hate Sophie? Tell us.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'd forgotten about this.
Yep.
Because Sophie's a coward.
Nice phone.
Yep. Or at least
I love how the phone
watching.
Dates us.
Mm-hmm.
We know exactly when this happened.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't matter. From now on, anytime anybody watches this and sees that scene, you're going to know exactly when that happened.
Yeah.
And then this music starts.
Yep.
I love it when this music started.
Yep. Oh, this is it.
It just lifted you.
This is like the best song on the soundtrack, too. Like anytime you wanted to get pumped up for anything, you just put this.
Yep.
This is it.
They played this song everywhere for a while.
This is the crane shot?
This is the crane shot. It's going to happen in a second. But.
This is a
very cool shot.
Too. Yeah.
Like the guy in the back. All these guys are so cool,
but they're the typical
henchmen.
They're the typical henchmen, exactly. Yeah, right. They're the young, dumb, like kind of weird,
disposable.
But
they are the best
goons.
Hockey and disposable.
But you know what? But they are the best henchmen I've ever seen in any film ever.
Yeah,
I swear, because you've seen henchmen in like all sorts of other films, and they're all goofy, nothings, anything. Every one of them is someone.
Right. That is a good element that I like about it is because. As you say, like they're all dressed the same.
Oh, yeah.
Charlie Brown.
They're all dressed the same, but they each have their own little tics and their own little kind of style and personality.
Right.
Even though they're disposable henchmen.
Exactly. They have personality. They're not just anonymous red shirts.
Right, right.
There's the 5678s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I guess the story about that is that he was in Tokyo. Quentin Tarantino was in Tokyo in some store, and he heard the 5678s playing. He's like... He got the CD, and it's like, I want to put this in the movie.
Yeah.
We got to find them. And then they basically have to try.
That's still the same shot.
That's
still the same crane shot that took them all the way through and took them up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, huh? That's impressive.
Still the same shot.
And
here we go. It's still continuing. This is all the same shot.
Wow.
Now, they may have, I've really talked about this with people. There might be a couple points where they cut it and continued, but...
Did anyone pass in front of the camera? I didn't notice.
No, one did. No, I think they probably could have done it as just one.
No, because,
doable.
Well,
totally.
Yeah, it would have been a very...
And there's another one, too. That was just one.
There's another really long one, too. Oh, yeah, during the fight scene? Yeah.
No, it's still when they're walking. It's when she goes to the bathroom. It's going to continue.
Mm. I mean, I guess they could have built just a very massive crane rig and put it in the middle.
How did...
Oh.
Oh, she knows that she's there. Wow. What's her name again? Chiaki Kuri.
Classic.
I can't
think of
it.
That's great.
Yeah,
classic mistake, not looking up.
Yep. They never do because they just don't suspect people to be that awesome.
Yeah.
Right?
Actually, the 5678s are pretty awesome.
They are pretty awesome. They're good on the soundtrack as well.
Yeah. Huh.
That's a great addition too, where she's got like the little charms on
right,
her
because
tanto
it's very
blade.
Japanese. Yeah.
Japanese schoolgirl.
Yep. Oh, very, yeah. Very.
If it had been like, to be perfect, it would have been Hello Kitty charms.
Yeah. Or Pink Panther.
Yeah. Or Pink Panther.
By the way, there's another random foot shot. I think.
Well, the
I
five,
think
six,
Quentin,
seven.
Kind of likes the whole feet thing.
No, I think the five, six, Skid seven, eight's just
yep.
actually.
Those are Adidas martial arts shoes.
I think they perform like that. They perform barefoot.
I know, but he didn't have to do a close-up shot.
Yes, he did.
Yep, he had to. It was in their contract.
Let's just right? say that Quentin Tarantino has a foot fetish.
I like it.
I like it, too.
Let's go with that.
I'm perpetuating it. So,
heck,
did you guys know that Quentin Tarantino
has
a foot fetish?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Really?
Here's the shot. This is the best one.
Yeah, this is the one where really...
This is like the most amazing shot.
So that's Steadicam.
I think it's a crane.
Well,
I don't know.
This is Steadicam right now.
But it goes up.
Then they get on a crane.
See?
Oh,
yeah.
No, you know what? That was a Luma. I'm sorry. I apologize.
This is all the same shots, though.
That was a Luma crane. Okay. Yep.
And this is amazing.
I mean,
like film school students, we were just like, what the heck is this?
You definitely have to control the means of production here. You got to have your set and, you know, really plan it out. And
of course.
And then the Luma comes down. Yeah.
Luma, yep. I don't know if I've heard of that.
I think it's a Luma. I'm trying to remember.
I love that.
That's a muslin, as opposed to technocrane. But technocrane just goes up. I think a Luma, you have something where you can go down from the top.
But now it follows this girl out.
Yeah.
Well, no. It follows
this is Steadicam now.
Yeah.
This is all Steadicam.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he does a great job.
Aww.
And he is Charlie Brown. And he's
great
even
characters.
Got the jag.
Yeah. Great characters. And Charlie it's still Brown. Going. Same shot is still going.
Yeah. And now,
now picks her up and it follows her to the ladies'
back
room, too.
See, they're like, what they have basically is two different cranes and a steady cam running in between. And they're just keeping on going.
So you're saying that it's an editing trick.
Are you saying that the steady cam operator is getting on and off cranes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the only way to do it.
Boy, that would have taken a lot of rehearsal.
This is
right.
I wonder how many takes.
Right, to one. Can you imagine?
Seriously,
this would take days.
By the way, this is a different thing too, because now they're totally steady camming it because they would have had to pass through those overhead slats unless they pull those out, which is possible.
Absolutely, you can pull
everything
out.
That's so good. Yeah, that's great. That's like one of the oldest tricks in the book. But I love it when filmmakers use smoke and mirrors. It still makes me so happy, like when they don't have to use CGI or something. Actually uses a trick.
Yep.
It's great.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
The ghost.
It's the business eyes.
it's the music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's just deciding how to.
That was a great twitch.
What form
well,
of destruction
like,
is about to
well,
be rained
on she's
kind of
holding
her.
Herself back, like, not yet. Not yet.
Well, and she only hears that sound and makes that eyes when she's definitely gonna F somebody up.
Yep.
But you know, you could see in her eyes too, right there, like, oh, I didn't expect this, but how can I use this and not mess up my plan?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. She's basically
She just calls her out.
Calls
her
out.
To come out instead of trying to go into her.
Yep.
And there we go.
And I remember thinking in the theater when all these people come out, like, what if she kills all these people by herself? And then she did. I was so excited.
And then she kills 88 more.
88. Yes. No, that's what I meant.
87.
All of them.
Right.
She doesn't kill the last one. Oh, that's what she did. She did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that's right. She let the one kid go.
That's right. The music here is great, too.
And her look, the look on her face.
The best showdown ever.
Right?
Two badass bitches.
And this is a really long sequence.
Tricks are for
basically,
kids.
This sequence is like 40 minutes long, the whole thing. From when it started when The House of Blue Leaves started.
Oh.
That's right.
Oh.
I took the arm of your BFF.
That actually shocked her. It actually shocked her.
Yeah.
She wasn't expecting that.
No.
No. I mean, business.
She's like, I don't remember her being that evil, but I guess she is now.
Oh, man. Like
As rightfully she should be. We left her for dead and took her baby, you know?
And I love the people running, screaming.
Well, it
like,
took them a second, but that's great. It's like, we are out of here.
I love, I love the glass floor that you can see through,
Well, that's a great design.
Totally is.
Scared.
Anybody know, trivia, how long it took them to shoot the fight, the sword fight sequence, once that starts.
Because
they've
know.
Got the underneath shot.
Forever. It took a long time.
Forever. I mean, I'm sure they like lived
this
in
whole,
this set.
This whole sequence seriously. Lasted, I mean, when I talk, the whole thing probably lasted about 2 months.
Yeah.
Probably. Easily. With everything. Well, and then we're not even counting rehearsal.
Yeah.
So, because they were training for quite a while.
She's like, ooh, warm up.
Yep.
That's right.
But oh, man.
I think that Oren knows from the second she walks in there that she's not going to make it out. Because she knows what that kind of revenge is. And
yeah.
I think that's
good.
Why she's shocked
she
and scared. Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah. She knows.
Oh, these guys. It's a shame because they were such good characters. And they're dead. Dead.
Yeah. But dead by such an interesting character that we want to win.
I love that.
Yep.
And
yep.
I love this. Oh, do you know what that's from? Is that from a specific film? That and the whole like close-up sword turn right before she starts like wreaking havoc?
Yeah, I don't
they
know
showed
what
it
that
twice
is,
now.
But I like
I
it.
I love it. Yeah, yeah, I love the little additions. And I got to want like I just want to know whether that's Quentin Tarantino being that awesome, which I give him totally, but
sure.
I wonder if it's an homage.
Oh, I'm sure it's an homage. I mean, well, it's something me clearly
well,
from.
The style is an homage, but that's
I like that her hair
thing.
Is curled for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. just saying.
Awesome.
Bitch curled her hair.
But that's
for
perfect.
The big fight.
Like, just
yes.
The idea that
she
styles,
up.
Right? Does a little makeup. Not too much. Just enough.
Just enough. To go with the blood.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do they seriously think they can take her on?
I know, right?
I mean, they've got to try because either she's going to kill him or Oren Ishii is going to kill him.
Yeah. I like how you could see with snowing
no,
outside. Well,
no room for
snowing
fake.
In the whatever, fake outside.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Good call.
But see, they have honor, so they try.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Like, this is reality supposed to be, but you got to wonder, like, what kind of slightly alternate world this is where the top crime boss in Japan travels around with people with swords, not guns.
Well,
what
Japan,
kind of enemies are they expecting people to attack her, you know?
Go.
I like it, but I'm just saying.
That is just wrong.
Our reputation.
It's
just
so
right.
wrong.
I love it.
It's great.
It's just the wrong juxtaposition. school girl outfit and a very deadly weapon.
Yeah. Spiky.
Yeah. Another one of Quentin's fantasies.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, you watch like any run-of-the-mill anime.
Yeah.
Oh,
and you're
sure.
going to see that.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, it's not classic.
But it's just
classic.
The juxtaposition. Yeah. It's just so weird.
I love her little like Japanese girl giggle.
Giggle, yeah.
Oh, it's good. It's right on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
She's like,
yep.
Are you
I
really
love her
gonna
reaction.
Mm-hmm. It's like,
yeah,
okay. Are you really gonna throw that at me? Come on.
The fun is that you can see, you know, the bride's reaction to her. It, like, this is gonna be fun. It's gonna be a challenge. This girl's got something.
I still think she's a little on the. I got to pay attention and cautious side.
Yeah, but in like
but
kind
you don't
of a
scare
fun
me.
Way. Yeah,
you're
you
not intimidating
me
with right. your metal ball.
Mm-hmm. Do you notice that?
Well,
she looked
true.
For her eyes to move to look to, at the ball instead of at her to throw it.
Oh,
which is perfect because in martial arts, you never want to watch the weapon. You never want to look at the arm,
right.
the leg. You
it's
keep
the same
your...
thing in that hand slapping game.
Nice.
Yeah,
it's the same thing
right,
with
right.
that.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
To use a banal example, Heidi, thank you.
I just gave away my technique to the entire listening public.
But it's like whack-a-mole. Whack-a-mole is the same thing.
Yeah. Except that you're going up against an inanimate object.
Well, that's true.
You can't look an inanimate object in the eye.
No. Or at least the bad
I've been
idea.
Playing that game all wrong. I thought it was a stare down.
By the way, I have to mention something about fighting style here.
Yeah.
So Japanese girl, right?
Oh.
Oh.
That's great.
I love the bowling ball, the pins going down at that, the sound effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
That's right.
The whole,
now
like,
it gets interesting.
The whole chain and ball weapon thing is very Chinese. That's a very Chinese kung fu weapon and fighting style. And yet she's Japanese doing that. And the short blade she carries, though, is a traditional Tanto blade, which is a samurai weapon. It's Japanese.
Yeah. Right. So commit hari kari if you lose in battle, right?
Yeah, seppuku, but yeah. Yeah.
But she works for half Japanese, half Chinese, half American.
Right,
right.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So probably Oren taught her how to use that. That's my guess.
Oh, it's the old nails in the side of the head.
Bored with nails.
But all of a sudden, new again.
Yeah. Right.
And the blood from her eyes.
The old-fashioned blood from the eyes.
Yeah.
I like it.
Oh,
it's great.
And now her shoes are red.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Her shoes changed. Oh, yeah. Look at that. You know what? I like the blood from the eyes thing because it's almost like something you'd see when you kill like some kind of supernatural being.
Yeah.
Like,
well, they use it a lot.
It's very anime also.
In movies where statues cry.
Hmm.
It reminds me of Stigmata. Did you see that?
Interesting.
They use it a few times in movies like that.
That reminds me also of Let the Right One In.
She looks at it.
When she goes into the house without being invited.
Considers the little blade.
She starts bleeding from the eyes.
Yep.
And then throws it down.
Yep.
I will not surrender.
Nope.
Because
I got backup.
Because the crazy 88s are on their way.
I love how they still have one civilian in there freaking out just for flavor.
Yeah.
The proprietor of the restaurant.
Like,
she's just like,
what do I do?
Love this part.
Should I leave?
Yeah.
Can I leave?
What's that sound?
I did. Silly rabbit. Tricks are for kids. Get it. I love. I don't know why they even use that in this movie. I love it. It's one of my favorite things to just say.
Mm-hmm.
And I love when I'm sitting in the movie theater and they pulled that out. Quentin Tarantino.
It's like so random. But you know, it kind of suggests a personal relationship between them.
Right.
I like how everyone just shows up at the same time from behind panels.
Again, and you see her observe it with her.
But
it's
all a close up on her eyes.
Like it's a classic.
And are we going to the black and the whites now? Because it is almost time.
Yeah.
And the music's going.
And the music.
Yep.
It's great. It's almost 70s, but kind of techno, kind of something you think you might hear in a mall in Japan.
It's really epic, I think, this music, actually.
I like how, there's essentially a rock garden underneath there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A place of calm and peace.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
And this was always cool. She can see how many are behind her.
Because it's so shiny.
That's right.
So even after slicing through several people and stabbing and such.
So we know one of her
because blood
techniques.
Just falls off of it.
No doubt. Or maybe it eats the blood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it absorbs it into the blood. Blood.
Yeah.
I like how she started it.
Oh, man. Because she doesn't wait. Yeah, that's what I like.
Oh, man.
Nice.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh. I got your eye.
So now we're in black and white.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so now to the black and white thing we were talking about earlier.
Yes.
Sometimes I think that the way a movie ends up being is exactly how it needed to be. And I feel like sometimes outside influences have to present themselves to an artist who's creating something in order to give them guidelines to make something better than they would have just made on their own.
Yeah.
I think having this challenge of how are we going to get this R-rated and what are we going to do with this scene and having to rise to the occasion of just putting it in black and white actually adds so much to this movie, because we could have seen all of this with the blood, but we already just saw a bunch of that.
Right.
And we've seen it this whole time. And now suddenly we get this new perspective to look at something that we wouldn't have had otherwise. And I love this black and white sequence.
Totally.
I feel like it really
too.
Breaks up the film.
Me too.
Yeah, and it also harkens to a lot of the old samurai films that
were
in black
and
white.
That were in black and white.
And this is like a classic, you know, group battle scene kind of thing you would see in one of those. I thought it was totally intentional. I had no idea they had to do this.
I didn't know until afterwards.
She just split someone in half.
Yep.
Yeah.
Vertically.
Shunk.
Yeah.
Which reminds me of, what was that on?
Oh.
Conan the Barbarian.
I like how they all went, ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
at that move. They
like
that.
Well, and I remember Quentin said something to the effect of, because they kept saying, take the blood out, take the blood out. It's too violent. And he said, if I take some of the blood out, it will become more violent. Because right now it's cartoonish.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Less blood would be
more
realistic.
Violent, yeah.
It would be
realistic.
More realistic.
But that's like Star Wars. You know, Star Wars is incredibly violent and there's no blood.
Yeah, but that's totally justifiable because you have like these superheated weapons that they're using.
Yeah, okay.
Cauterize.
Right.
Fine. Yeah, instantly.
Lightsabers cauterize instantly and blaster bolts. I mean, they're not, you know, it's not as messy as projectile weapons.
Yeah, it's not a samurai sword.
Right. You're not hacking someone up with a straight-up blade.
Man.
Plus, I do like the separation here, again, of having this whole sequence be in black and white.
It does set it apart, yes.
It sets it apart, and it gives, it kind of explains what kind of a situation this is, too. This is just a black and white situation. This is you just go in. These are a bunch of your opponents.
Right.
It's nothing deeper than this.
Right. Hero and bad guys.
Right. Yep. Hero and bad guys. Her fighting these guys. All these guys are the same person, you know, to her in her eyes.
Well, actually, you know what? They all have masks.
Right.
So they are, in a way, the same person.
You know, and it's just like a group to get through to get to her ultimate goal, which it does go back to being color then. You know, it's just...
Well, plus it's so beautiful when she finally walks into that garden. Yep.
I was
and part of
say that
because
yeah.
you've been in black and white
because
this whole time.
Because it's a juxtaposition suddenly, and now
and
suddenly here's
all this
vibrant color again.
Unplanned, they had a really nice spectrum of grayscale going on in the set and in the costumes.
Mm-hmm.
That I mean, it's almost surprising that it wasn't planned to be black and white.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because the lighting's perfect for it.
Yeah. Oh, I bet that was the stunt lady right there. Didn't look quite.
Oh, that's totally her.
That's
too.
Totally
yeah.
Zoe Bell.
Right
yeah.
there, jumping up and around. Yep. Zoe Bell, get it.
Yeah.
And
all those guys losing their limbs is just so painful.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Oh, because now she's basically taken out all the older ones. Now she's getting the really young ones
that were scared and held back.
And I love it.
Didn't rush forward.
Yeah,
because
these
even have a mask yet.
These are all like they're all like 12 years old. Exactly.
Yeah.
I love it when we go into the blue silhouette thing.
Ready? Blink it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah,
that's a great way
because
to go between.
Now, but this is a good clue because now you see their children, just like she, you know, she doesn't want to have to fight children because she's a mother.
Mm.
But she'll do it because she does save the last kid.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah,
that aspect,
and that's why maybe
she,
you know, the justification of going back to color. If we just read it for what it is, as opposed to, you know, if they're going to try and kill her, she'll. Do
I love this sequence
to.
Too because this is for real, all Zoe Bell. They didn't have to do anything.
Oh, yeah, you can,
right?
you can tell her profile, yeah.
Yeah, because they could just throw her in there. They're like, oh, we're going to give you a silhouette scene so you can just go crazy and do all your tricks.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Because she wasn't using the flying, like, very wushu, like, leg kick spins before that she's using so much here.
Yeah, because they can have it, like, almost entirely be her, you know?
Mm-hmm. And now that's Uma Thurman.
Yeah, for sure.
Because you can tell.
Because she's taller.
Well, you can tell with the nose also.
Yeah. Although her and Zoe actually have very similar facial features.
They do.
It's crazy.
Very similar.
I love that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Get out of here, kid. You don't even have a mask.
He's like, oh.
But I like, again.
I like that.
Yeah. I love that she spanks him.
See?
Yep. Yeah. In the midst of all that death, some mercy.
Oh, and there's Gordon Liu.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is Zoe Bell. Parley.
Hanging on for dear life. I love this wire
That's
work.
Yeah.
Well, it's a combination of both. Wow, that wire work is awesome.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's just a combination of both of them.
Yeah. I mean, that's, again, I'm a reflection of both of their, you know, performance levels is to be able to go easily between the lead actress and the stunt woman like that and not be able to tell is amazing.
For sure.
Well, Uma trained for like a year or something ridiculous before they started shooting this.
Well, you would have to. I mean, it's just such a high degree of specific type of sword fighting.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You can't fake people out.
Oh my God.
Anymore. Wow.
I love this little speech too.
Yep.
Yeah.
The guy with the
except
guy.
You, yeah. Sophie.
Well, and leave your limbs. They're mine.
I love, too, that she's standing next to the dagger that Oren stabbed into the rail.
Yep.
What did she say? That's right. Leave the limbs you've lost.
They belong to me now.
And you can hear the moaning in the back.
Yes. Yep.
And she makes this speech as though all of them are listening and not thinking about their limbs.
Yeah.
And I love that Sophie knows to just lay there until she comes back. or else it's going to be way worse.
Yeah, I'd be like, all right.
I'm not going anywhere.
I'm staying put.
I'm just
I love
impressed.
How she's slipping in the blood.
Yeah.
Right? I'm just impressed that Sophie's still alive.
Yeah.
By the way.
After losing that much blood.
That brachial artery was wide open.
Bam.
Yeah.
And here it is, quiet and serene.
But then they go into the flamenco music.
Yeah, I love it.
I love it.
But I like right before it does, the sound. It's, if you notice, like, the fountain, and the little thing that plucks in, it's beautiful.
It's not,
look at that.
It's not actually flamenco. You know,
yellow and blue.
It's not actually flamenco music. It was. This was a popular song from the 70s.
Well, I know it is, okay, but it starts out. It's a fusion.
Flamenco. Yes, yes.
It's a fusion.
Yeah. Right there, that little plunk thing. That's what I love when it does
that. Mm-hmm. That is a great addition.
Yeah, this was a big disco song in the 70s.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I love that.
Well, it just uses the first part.
For
of
a samurai thing. Showdown, it starts off with flamenco music and then moves into the disco.
Because it's a dance.
Yep.
Well,
it's a
it
dance.
Is. It is.
It's.
Now, and I know this doesn't make a difference, but this is outside, or is it? Is it like inside in a artificial.
I think it is because it wasn't snowing. Right. Maybe it is snowing outside later when she rolls Sophie's body down.
It is.
Oh, it is. Yeah, so it is. It is. Okay, so it is outside. Okay.
But it is an indoor shot.
Well, oh, for sure. Well, it was shot. But in the film, it is supposed to be outside.
We just talked over it, but I do like the little reveal where she asks about the sword and she turns so you can see the logo.
Mm. Now, this all takes place on mainland Japan, right?
Yeah.
Aren't we in Tokyo?
Yeah, this is Tokyo now.
I never caught this, but she says, "Whom in Okinawa made you this Japanese steel?"
So she knows.
Totally different location.
She said something to her about coming from Okinawa.
Oh, she did?
To get a sword, yeah. I think something like that was just said.
Just over that part.
And she's like, "Yeah, bitch, I'm going to fight you in a kimono."
Yep.
That's right.
And she does the whole traditional taking the shoes off like she's going indoors. Kind of thing.
Oh, here we go.
Starts, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this was a popular song in the 70s, disco song?
Big disco song.
It's also on the soundtrack.
It is.
No
pushing
doubt.
Pushing that soundtrack.
Yep.
You almost expect her to start doing a fan dance or...
Yeah. You know, it's lovely.
Some kind of geisha
I like
ceremony.
Her sword.
You do?
I do.
And by the way,
I'm not really a big fan.
I love it.
Observation.
What is it you like about her sword?
Because it's like one... It looks
yeah,
like
see,
one
that's
thing.
What I don't like a sword without. What is that, a hilt? Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
Scabbard.
Scabbard.
Oh, that. No, yeah, the hilt. The part that guards your hand.
Yeah. I don't like a sword without it.
Well, it's more dangerous. Like, you have to hold on to it tighter because nothing to. Like, you start fighting, your hand can get sweaty, or you could get blood on the hilt, and it could slide forward easily if you get a stab. There was a game called Samurai Showdown. It's funny you said those words together. That I used to love to play in the arcade back in the 90s when I was in high school. And there was a character that dressed in a traditional kimono. It was a guy, but it was a guy with long hair who had a sword just like that. And I kind of wonder if Tarantino likes the game.
I'm
and this
sure
is a little bit
does.
Of an homage to that character also.
I like the snow falling. I really, really like it. And how it just...
And it's really good snow. I just recently watched a horrible film called Little Riding Hood or Little Riding
Hood.
Was Red
Riding Hood bad?
It was horrible.
Really?
Is it so bad it's good, though?
No, it's so bad.
It's so bad it's bad?
It's just bad.
Oh, no.
And they have a whole bunch of fake snow in it, and it's clearly just sand.
Ugh. Oh, man.
You know? I mean, it looks so bad.
Well, that's some really good snow.
Too bad.
Yeah, this is beautiful snow.
Thanks for telling me that. I might have watched that movie sometime, but now I won't.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even good for, like,
Gary
a teenage
Oldman?
Girl. Yeah, no.
Wow.
It's not good for anyone. No one needs to see that.
That's too bad. When you've got Gary Oldman something and it's crap.
Sorry,
it's
Taylor.
Bad.
Everything's bad.
Sorry.
It's not good for anyone.
I love Gary Oldman.
Me too.
He's like my favorite.
I don't know how they got him to be
definitely.
In that movie.
Ooh.
He said it appealed to the 14-year-old girl in him. That's a direct quote.
That's such a Gary Oldman thing to say. It is such
that
a
in his
Oldman.
Pocketbook, no doubt.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love her little smile.
Oh, don't get cocky, kid.
She can't help it. She's doing it because she's scared.
Now it's going into a little bit of slow motion there.
She just needs a moment. She's got to, it's just like the big toe thing.
Mm-hmm.
She's just like, stand up. You're leaking, spinal fluid out at your back, but
we're going to do this.
Yeah.
You still got it.
That's right.
She's definitely not going to die laying down.
And she has freckles, too, and you don't, so.
I love Lucy Liu's freckles.
I do too.
I read somewhere that she used to hate him when she was younger, and she used to try to cover him up.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. Nice shot.
Uh-oh.
I love, like, the blood against
and
the white.
And then the fountain.
Right, here we go. Yeah. Here's a little sound effect that's so good.
Oh, this is amazing.
And you hear it through the whole fight.
Yeah. But we haven't noticed it, yeah.
Yep. Or we haven't known what it was.
Yeah.
Oh, and then the red on the white.
Shot too. Yep.
And then it like perfectly falls down like the center of like where the toe crease is. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like someone was standing there with a little dropper.
Oh, they took some time with that shot.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But it was worth it. You know, it's funny, as compared to the other fights, the whole thing about this one, of course, it's in the very serene locale out in the garden with the snow falling. It's pretty minimal. They spend a lot of time checking each other out mm-hmm. with relatively few moves.
Yeah.
As opposed to what's just been happening for the past half hour.
Well, because they're true warriors. They don't need as many moves. You know, those kids are just young. They just run into a fight, start swinging things around.
And now we see the respect mm-hmm. for each other.
Right.
Yeah. It's definitely a very different type of fight when you have two people who are both very skilled.
Right.
It can be, it's usually a lot quicker.
Right, less moves because there's just not as much filler. It's all very precise.
But two, you're trying to anticipate what your opponent's going to do.
It's like chess.
And that's harder.
It's like chess.
It's exactly like chess.
It's exactly like chess, yeah. And I love this whole moment because you really just know, like right here, like only their honor compels them to continue to fight because mm-hmm. I don't think that either one of them really want to end this, you know?
But she...
Because they respect each other.
Oh, there we go. But
Except there's the revenge factor.
Right, there is a revenge factor. Well, so in other words, it's not going to stop. The bride will not stop,
right.
No matter what.
I love that she wins. She kills her by cutting off just kind of the top of her skull.
Yeah.
Because that would totally kill you, but it's a lot more interesting than just a straight up, you know, cut off the head and all that we've seen a whole bunch of already.
Right.
Very creative.
Well, and that it also doesn't desecrate her body either.
No.
Right. You know?
Not really. Yeah.
Now we're back to a little Nancy Sinatra.
And also this was, now remember, this is her first kill.
Oh, no, this isn't Nancy Sinatra.
Oh, that's right.
This is her first kill.
Right.
Because then she goes to kill Vernita.
Yep.
So now the revenge has started.
Right.
She succeeded, at least gotten past
this.
Well,
she had to
kill
her to get to Bill.
This is one of the hardest parts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's the most skilled. She's the one she respects the most.
Exactly.
She's the most, like...
Protected. She has
protected, the most high A-level. You know, she had to go and do this first.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
In order to prove not only just to herself that she was going to accomplish everything, but to everyone else out there. Now all the other people that are part of the assassin squad, including Bill... No, she's alive, and she went right to Japan and killed Ora Nishii. You know, like, this is business.
Mm. Right.
And that's even what she says to Sophie.
Yeah, exactly.
When she rolls
that's
her down
why
the hill.
She keeps Sophie alive.
And strategically, it makes sense to do that because she'd be the one that could prepare more. She had more resources to prepare if she knew that someone was coming for her.
Yeah,
right.
The element
being
of
caught
surprise.
Off guard, not knowing, is the best chance that you know, Beatrix has.
Right. Roll her down that hill.
Yeah, that's...
I just love it.
Yeah.
So many things, so many elements of this that are creative.
But it's the thing, I mean, who wants to be the Sophie? You know what I mean? Like, really, really out there. Look at your life, and if you're the Sophie, I want you to cut off your own arm
right
now.
Cut off your own arm.
If this is the role you play...
In life.
In our Kill Bill life analogy.
You might as well just cut off your own arm right now.
And roll yourself down a hill.
And roll yourself down a hill.
A snowy hill. Onto asphalt.
Yeah.
In Japan.
At the Tokyo General Hospital.
Yes.
She does. I got to say, Julie Dreyfus did a great job in this film.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Good.
I like the choice of lighting here. So we're not really focusing on a lot of details. The whole point is for her to tell what happened.
Right, exactly. And the whole thing you're expecting, of course, because you know this is Bill, you're expecting him to basically kill her at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
And just look how small her face is. His hand is so, I mean, he's such a big man. She's just got such a small face.
two reasons.
She speaks really good French, by the way.
Mm. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Wonder how her Japanese is.
Very good accent.
I thought she was French.
Is she?
I think so.
Judy Dreyfus? Oh, yeah, makes sense, yeah. She speaks English very well, too.
Yep.
I love this, too, that she's looking down at her with the helmet on.
Yeah.
You know?
Which we saw before, because when she was looking at her in the car.
Yeah.
But another great performance, because you're not seeing any expression. It's all in her voice.
And the body movement.
Yeah. And you really feel what she's feeling.
But that's why she looks like a superhero, because now she's got this, like, big helmet on. She's looking down on you. I don't know. It's great.
She's like Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future when he says, my name is Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I'm an extraterrestrial from the planet Vulcan. That's a great choice, though. Do you think that they shot that with the stunt double, maybe? It would have been easier to just stick her in an outfit.
No, that's
they
Uma.
They need Uma.
Yeah, who knows? I
think it's Uma.
Could have been a stand. I doubt he would do that.
Because of her body frame.
Because of her body and... It is important to have that movement because you're not seeing her face.
Right. And just
she's
like the
barely
the,
twitching.
I'm sure. If this was some like ridiculous like J.J. Abrams big budget picture, I would tell you that's definitely not the main actress in that outfit.
Yeah, that's a standard.
But since this is like an artistic feature that what it is in its own way.
You're right. It is.
And because of the relationship between Uma Thurman and Quentin Tarantino, I would bet it is her in that costume. Because I think she would want to go the extra mile. I think they would want to go the extra mile to get a little bit more quality out of it than just throw a stand-in in.
Okay.
Right.
I can see that.
And then, of course, we just found out. Did we just find out?
No,
we just found out that he knows that she knows that he knows
that she's a coming.
Yeah.
Right. That's about it. Yeah, exactly.
And now she's making the list, though.
See, now
she hadn't made a list before.
And then the assassin class.
Exactly. Everyone has their samurai swords.
On my next flight, I would like...
I would like assassin class.
Assassin class, please.
From a sword.
I like she's two different color pens, too.
That's right.
Yeah.
This is like serious business.
Right? Seriously.
I got two
in
colors.
In middle school. Two different. That's what you always like see of kids. I just love
but
it that
it's those
very...
little details that make you love Quentin Tarantino. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's a real serious
it's
list.
It's just... That
this isn't just like,
but it's like she's a little. It's like being in middle school at the same time.
Exactly.
We have two pens.
I'm making a list now. It's serious, and I'm using two different colors.
That's right.
As Heidi pointed out,
right? Because the red is for the names,
right? And notice that the numbers
so that
get
they stand out,
and the letters get bigger.
Bill.
I love that,
and the blues
and the green,
and
the
green,
bam, right. Just like that.
Oh, this shocked me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does she know?
And then it just cut to black.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so good.
So good. Yep. So good.
One of the best cliffhangers ever.
And you're sitting in the movie theater.
Going like, what?
And you don't know what to do yet.
No, you've just been on this serious ride.
And you're just sitting in your chair surrounded by a gaggle of nerdy boys.
Production IG, Tokyo, Japan.
I don't think we'll have that experience tonight, Heidi.
We're just going to be sitting there after Sucker Punch, just sitting.
Just sitting.
Just blown away.
With my brain cells high-fiving each other.
You have to pee so bad, but you're not ready to leave your seat.
No.
It's
not the right time.
That's the nerd coma.
Yeah.
Nerd
that's
coma.
Where you're so enthralled in this movie that you're watching.
What
you just
happened
can't
to
move.
Me?
And you look at them, and it's just like they're catatonic. But inside, you're like, oh.
Because you need a second to just process. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let it all just sink in for a moment.
And then the next thing comes and you're processing that. And then it just perpetuates itself.
Chiaki Kuriyama. That's her name. Gogo Yubari.
So, what?
That was the one with the ball. With the razor ball.
Oh,
it was in
right.
Battle Royale.
Okay. Yeah. Crazy 88's number
spanked
one,
boy.
Two, three, four.
I like Spanked
Boy.
Yeah.
Boy.
There you
awesome.
Go.
You know he showed that to like all his friends.
Oh, yeah. He was like, spanked boy.
Yeah.
Uma Thurman spanked me with a sword.
With a sword.
In like five takes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Lucky boy. Crazy 88 fight.
My life is complete.
Mm-hmm.
They just had the bride stunt double twice.
That's Zobel. Like everybody Bam. Is Chinese in that team. Do you notice that?
Physical therapist.
Because
they're all using Japanese swords.
But they shot this in China.
Except for hatchets and stuff. Did they shoot it in China?
They shot a big chunk of this in China, yeah.
Well, it's
big.
Beijing's becoming one of the film capitals.
Well, and there's just, I'm sure it's
still, and that, like, they, well, also, that's where they do all the kung fu movies.
Exactly.
I mean, they've already got production facilities.
This really is a kung fu movie. Yeah. I mean, the two of them, I mean, I would say
this is the
primarily
kung fu film.
Above any other type of film, that they're kung fu movies. Yes.
Which is ironic because a lot of the fighting is Japanese kendo.
I mean, until it's get to the second film and they go into her whole
training.
Well, that,
kung
of course,
training.
Is very, very Chinese, but yeah.
Oh, I'm so excited for some Pai Mei.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pai Mei's awesome. Little beard.
But I.
And I say little.
Right. Yes.
yeah.
So good.
Pulls the beard.
Yeah. So
classic.
That's a pretty good film.
It's a great film.
Yeah, it was all right.
Love it.
It's okay.
It's
all right.
It's pretty close to flawless, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As close as any film can be. I would say.
And for a two-parter, I mean, I feel like it's a standalone. Like, see, that's the thing about, like, one and two, when I try to, like, decide which one I think is better. I don't think either one is better. But I do think Kill Bill Volume 1 could just be a movie on its own, and you could never see the second volume and still be completely satisfied.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Volume 2, you need Volume 1.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree. That's a good way to put it.
Okay. Well,
the way to encapsulate
it. Empire Strikes Back. You know, do you have to have seen Star Wars to enjoy Empire Strikes Back?
No.
Okay.
Not to enjoy it. I think to get the most out of it, you do.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
It's not the same kind of connection as these two films.
No.
But
I don't.
It's definitely.
I don't, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Greg Nicotero. I recognize that name.
Why?
Makeup is one of the makeup people that, I don't know, one of the names I've heard thrown about by Eusti.
Mm.
He doesn't throw it.
Even the music here is really good.
Oh,
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's great. Long
assistant
credits.
To the RZA.
Whatever that was.
I feel like we should throw up a game
RZA.
Sign for that.
Yeah, right. Oh boy.
Yeah. I have a problem with that one scene. Actually, the other problem I have is the scene when she's talking, you know, to Julie Dreyfus, to Sophie at the trunk. That for some reason I remember it bugging me when I saw it. It just seemed a little too self-aware of itself. Bless you.
Excuse me.
Otherwise, I liked everything else. And I think it was pretty wild.
You didn't have a problem with the extremely manicured toenails?
That's
you
the only problem
that
I have.
Strange.
Yeah,
strange.
It didn't really occur to me.
Yeah, I never noticed it either. I think you all being
girls
types that manicure your toenails.
See, Tokyo Casting Associates.
You noticed those things.
She helped
with it. If it would have been a guy and his toenails would have been that clean.
I would have had a problem with it.
You would have noticed it, though.
Yeah.
I think men just think women's toes always look clean and nice, which is great. You should think that. Well, we also never use the restroom either.
Right.
We just go in there to powder our nose.
And you always smell like peaches and rose water.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay.
No, I will say this, though. If her toes had been long and nasty, I would have said, oh, that makes sense. That's a great attention to detail.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I would have noticed it that
way.
But
because of his foot fetish, she had to be manicured.
The toes had
of
to
course.
Be good. It could have been her arms. Well, it makes sense that it was her feet and her toes. Yes. Okay. All right. So anyway,
great film.
Great
Yay.
Film.
Excellente.
Very good. Very good.
Muy excelente.
And the credits are still going.
Well,
now we're getting into Japanese names.
A lot of people worked on this.
Yeah, a lot of people.
So.
A lot of people. Tommy Tom.
Oh, good old Tommy Tom.
He worked on this.
Yes.
Taylor knows him well.
So, did you all learn anything from this at all? Did anything new occur to you?
Thank you.
Don't
professor.
Mess with Uma Thurman.
Okay.
I'm thinking about the anime thing, about the guy in the anime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to continue to decide if I think that's Bill or not. That's a new thing that happened for
and
me
I wonder
today.
If
and
we should
if,
look that up,
if,
though.
Well,
now I'm confused.
It's interesting. The Bill thing, I seem to have a vague memory of possibly thinking the same thing. It's just, I don't know. But I see where you're coming from. I think I may have assumed the same thing. But then the question is, if it was Bill, why would she go work for Bill?
Right. That's exactly the question that's been in my mind for all this time.
We should look in Volume 2 to see if there's any clues to that as well.
Yeah, maybe there is.
Maybe there is.
Because
they do so much flashback.
The ring that was showcased was a silver ring that had a
red dot
and
red
it was
dot.
Right.
Yeah.
Vaguely
and it
matched
square
the sword.
Shaped.
Yeah.
Like there was a thing.
Kind of, yeah. The, well, the
and
sword
on the
had
other
red.
Hand, he had a ring with a skull on it.
Yes.
Right.
So.
Right.
Right.
So we
something
should look
to look
for.
That. For.
Should look for that.
Okay.
Of course, Death Rides a Horse in Yo Morikore.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Because his favorite film is Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Good, bad. I thought I heard that. Yeah. Lots of great music in this. And were there animals in this?
No, but they monitored the animal action.
That's right.
Apparently.
And the credits, we're going to just go to the end of the credits and we're going to end.
Apparently.
I want Peter Bogdanovich.
Yeah. That's
nice. You know, actually, one last story before we wrap this up. For a long time, I think Warren Beatty was going to play Bill. And apparently the story is, we don't know all these things and whether they're true or not, but the story is that Quentin Tarantino was having lunch with Warren Beatty. He says, you know what? You should cast David Carradine. Kind of Warren Beatty's way of getting out of it, but you know, I think Warren Beatty may not have been up to doing this.
That's very surprising to me. But that's the story. For many reasons.
But that's the story. Yeah. That's only the story. I don't know whether to believe it, but the story was, hey, you should do David Carradine.
Warren Beatty's never done anything like that kind of a role, and Quentin Tarantino is such like a fan of these types of things. It almost seems like David Carradine was handpicked from his kung fu history,
right,
to be put into this movie. Whereas Warren Beatty's never been in anything remotely in any of these genres. Right.
But I'd heard about the Warren Beatty thing for quite a while, and then heard, okay, now it's going to be David Carradine. That's why kind of
interesting.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
I might
want to
look more into
that
too.
Yeah, but Warren Beatty in Kill Bill. Oh, he didn't do it. It would have been. Can't even say it would have been interesting. Can't even imagine what it would have been like.
But like Heidi said, the casting of David Carradine is so perfect, and it seems so thought out.
Well, because he's so intricately involved in one of the main genres to which that, you know, he was paying an homage to.
Yeah. Right.
So,
oh, so he's
so it's weird. Well, I can
sort
see
of,
Quentin
but, you know,
watching those TV shows going, I want to put him in one of my movies.
Right.
But here's a real interesting little tidbit for you. When they shot Kung Fu, David Carradine did not know any Kung Fu.
Yeah,
he didn't even know any karate.
Right.
Like, if you watch those, the fight scenes are so simplistic, and it barely looks like he even knows how to do a kick.
Right.
Like, it's not... It's kind of funny because that series, I personally wouldn't put that series into the genre of Kung Fu films, even though it was called Kung Fu.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It was like America's attempt at making something that cool.
Right.
And so I just thought the casting of Carradine at all was, like, very interesting. He totally was great for the role. But, like, when I heard that he had cast him for it, I'm like... That's weird. I hope it doesn't suck at the end because of that. You know, at the time, I just didn't have David Carradine in my mind as anything, you know, worth going back to.
I never questioned that.
No, me neither.
That always just seemed
like perfect
brilliance to me.
Well, that was the interesting thing that when story changed from being Warren Beatty to David Carradine, I'm like, okay, now that makes sense.
Yeah.
You
Warren Beatty makes like no sense
I agree.
To me. Maybe the least sense I can think of.
Plus, Quentin Tarantino has this ability to bring back people that I didn't know I missed.
Right.
You know?
That's a good way to put it.
I didn't know I wanted them to be in a movie.
Yeah.
He's really good at casting, very similar to how Chris Nolan is good at casting.
Yeah.
You hear about these people that are going to be in the Batman films, and you're like, what? He cast
and
who?
And then it's perfect.
And then you watch it, you're like, oh my God! It was awesome.
Genius. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up this week's... Film Grok, and we're actually going to move on to Volume 2 right away because we just can't. But that's going to come out.
We can't help ourselves.
It's going to come out the next week. And if you've lasted this long, and actually if you're around, you might want to know, if you live in the Los Angeles area, the new Beverly Cinema is actually showing Kill Bill, but back to back. It's called the Whole Bloody Affair, and I think on the 6th and the 7th, you can basically have to line up to get tickets. But who knows? Quentin Tarantino might show up for that. But a coincidence? Yes, it is actually. But it's Kill Bill week with the helm. So anyway, we will see you next week for Volume 2. And this has been...
Taylor Thomas.
And...
Duncan K. Fraser.
And...
Heidi Hilliker.
And Serge Delpierre. And this has been Film Grok. See ya.